using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Thursday, the 19th of August, year of our Lord, 2021, day 523 of America Held Hostage. Today, Joel Skousen is going to be our guest in the third hour. We're going to talk about his observations of Afghanistan, as Biden is telling everybody who knew. Well, of course, Joel Skousen was one person who knew. And we're also going to talk about what was left behind. There's a major biometric scanner which tells you something about the disorderly exit, but also what our government is planning to do to us domestically as well. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Well, what we have seen as a reckless, chaotic, fire-on-pants, run-out-the-exit screaming by the pentagram is now turning into a humanitarian crisis, especially for Americans. Always the last concern of the American government, and it is happening there as well. A picture has, or a video clip has emerged of a U.S. soldier taking footage from a mine-resistant, you can actually see at the end of it, I clipped it out, but he's actually taking pictures from an MRAP. He's a turret gunner, so you can see where he's taking the pictures from at the very end. But I want you to take a look at the airport. Look at the mass of humanity. As the Zero Hedge article pointed out, it's straight out of the scenes of World War Z, where Brad Pitt and others escape on a commercial jet while the zombies are attempting to commandeer the plane. You've got Apache gunships now clearing the way for the airport, as we showed yesterday. After that first day where people were hanging on the planes, running in front of the planes, running beside the plane, falling off of the plane, getting up into the wheel well and dying inside the wheel well as well. They now have Apache helicopters giving escort to this. And then right after this, you'll see the chaotic scenes at the airport where they have concertina wire set up. First it's at a distance, and then you can see up close the desperation of the people who are trying to escape. Just look at the massive scale of this crowd as he pans around. This kind of gives you a context of what is happening at the airport, right there at the runway. People just out of desperation lining up on either side of the runway. The Apache helicopters just barely off the ground keep people from running out. Now this is a scene at night, shot through concertina wire. You can see people running, shots being fired. This, I believe, is the Taliban trying to keep people from getting into the airport. This is being shot from inside the airport through concertina wire. Here it is on the ground. This is from the perspective of people on the outside trying to get in.
Come on, look at this guy.
They're lined up there at the hastily constructed barrier, begging, "Let me in, Taliban is coming." And here are some people holding up their baby. So just please take my baby. Isn't that amazing? You know, the other thing when I saw that, why is it that when we had the caravans coming through, we couldn't have had the military or Trump put up some hasty barriers? You know, there's no bloodshed that's happening there. The people can't get through the Constantino wire. But, of course, the integrity of our borders is never an issue, but it is a tragedy as you see the desperation of people trying to get away from the Taliban and from the corruption that is in Afghanistan. We'll talk about why and some comments from a guy who's had two tours in Iraq, two tours in Afghanistan, and he's been in contact with people that were left behind. And he talks about two individuals and their comments about what the country was like, is like now, but also why it fell are very telling. If you want to know why they're getting out, you know, the Taliban, and it actually, I played those clips yesterday because when I saw those guys dancing, I've had more laughs from that than I think I've had in a long time. I can't even think of it without laughing. But that and the pictures of them getting on merry-go-rounds and the pictures of them driving around in the little bumper cars, all that is very carefully crafted PR for them to look like there's really not any threat to anybody. They say, we love women and don't have any grudges against anybody else. Amnesty for everyone and so forth. This is carefully put out there. This is the reality, however, as we see what's happening in the streets. Now look at this. They're surrounding a building, and you've got some people that have been taken out. But look, there's a guy with an RPG pointed at the building. And then you'll see as they pan over here, you see a second guy with an RPG. They got two guys out there in the street with RPGs pointed at that building. And a bunch of other people with weapons. They got people on the ground with their hands over their head up against the wall. This is the reality of what is happening as they're going door-to-door grabbing people. Yeah, the Taliban are coming, as that lady was crying. A photographer for the LA Times, still reporting from Kabul, shared a harrowing report exposing the Taliban for not living up to their cuddly new reputation. The photographer said Taliban fighters beat members of a crowd waiting outside the Kabul airport on Wednesday. That was some of the chaos that you saw there in that second clip. With the butts of their guns, with tied rubber hoses, and with other weapons. The photographer himself was beaten when he was caught photographing the scene. And so you have the people that you saw crying through the barbed wire, come get us, the Taliban is coming. And they say that they have gotten 5,000 people out in the past 24 hours, and yet you can see shots of women who have been shot dead in the street for not wearing a burqa. And even this CNN reporter, Clarissa, forget what her last name was, that we've shown the last couple of days, daringly walking around in a black outfit with everything covered except for her face and her hands. She was accosted yesterday. They're just little felons who were having a day at the park and nothing to worry about now. They're relatively harmless, I guess, according to Biden administration. I'm not saying that we go, they're monsters. But it's not our job to shut them down. It never was our job. That war was based on a lie. And it was continued for 20 years. And it was given from the very beginning that this was ultimately going to be the outcome one day. Not necessarily this chaotic, not necessarily this disorganized, but that it was going to end up with us leaving. But we've left now in the worst possible way. Americans are warned of limited flights out of Kabul. The U.S. Embassy, by the way, is supposedly still in the country at the airport, although they have abandoned the U.S. Embassy. And what they're saying is first come, first serve. But in order to get served, you got to first come to the airport. How do you do that? Because the Taliban has set up checkpoints throughout the city. They've set up checkpoints to even get into the city from areas outside of Kabul. You have U.S. citizens, legal permanent residents, and their children, quote, should consider traveling to the airport, says the U.S. Embassy in Afghanistan, operating out of makeshift offices at the airport. They notice that the access point, quote, may change frequently, and will provide updates as necessary. You may be required to wait at the airport for a significant amount of time until space is available. Americans seeking to leave were told to fill out forms as soon as possible, but only once. They said the form is, quote, the only way to communicate your interest in a flight option. Do not call the U.S. Embassy in Kabul for details or updates about the flight. Do not travel to the airport until you've been informed by email that departure options exist. When you come, you can only bring one piece of luggage and per person if space is available. No room for pets. And so this is being run. Evidently, they have sent reinforcements, they probably sent some people over from the Department of Motor Vehicles. This is CBS, a quick report about the context.
Flights are taking off again from Kabul's airport. The U.S. had shut down the airport after some Afghans, desperate to flee the Taliban, clung to a U.S. military plane yesterday as it took off. At least four fell to their deaths. Crammed inside, one Afghan man filmed this video, telling us he pushed his way in without a visa or passport.
Oh, yeah.
And there are still many Americans trapped with no word of when they might be able to leave.
Let's see, no visa, no passport, no PCR test, no mask, no vaccine passport. And do we even know who these people are? Of course we don't. Of course we don't. Are they going to do anything to try to get Americans? Well, this is what was said at a Pentagram briefing yesterday.
General Milley, you say in your statement that one of your tasks is to evacuate all American citizens from Afghanistan who desire to leave. There are Americans clearly all over Kabul. There may be Americans in other parts of the country. How can the U.S., the Pentagon, live up to that task of evacuating all Americans? Because we continue to see the violence just outside the airport. And how would you get them in around the country unless you go get them?
Well, two things, Barbara. One is State Department, as you know, as I've said, is working with the Taliban to facilitate safe passage of American citizens, U.S. passport holders, to the airport. And that's the primary means, and under the current conditions, that's the primary effort. We have capability to do other things if necessary.
Well, can I ask you what that means? Because you also said there were international special forces there that have a
double
capability
speak.
To extract, and those words suggest very clearly in the military realm you would go get people.
Well, that would be a policy decision, and if directed, we have capabilities that can execute whatever we're directed.
Thank you.
Louis.
And I would draw a distinction, Barb, between extracting someone in an in extremis condition or circumstance versus going out and collecting up large numbers of American citizens.
Do you have the capability to go out and collect Americans?
We don't have the capability to go out and collect up large numbers of people, Barb.
Yeah, the Biden administration has no plans on doing that. As a matter of fact, in case you can't read through the lines that they're laying out there, the Biden administration has no plans to evacuate American citizens in Afghanistan who are located outside of Kabul, according to the Washington Post, citing two Senate aides. But, of course, you could see that in what these guys are saying. And we don't have any capability of doing that. You know, we have the first-come, first-serve policy. Contact the DMV here at the temporary offices in Kabul, and we'll let you know. don't come unless you're called. We'll call you. And then if you can get to the airport through the Taliban stuff, then, you know, maybe we can do something for you. But we're not going to come get you. We're not going to help you with any of this. You know, when you have the first come, first served, I guess, you know, the first person who served himself, the first guy who left, and that was the captain of the ship, the ex-president, Ashraf Ghani. Just giving you an indication of how corrupt this American puppet government was. Of course, this is a second tier of puppets. You know, you got the puppets in Afghanistan being run by the puppets in Washington that you see talking, that we vote for. And now they put a dollar figure on it, Interpol, As I said, $169 million. So now the question, if you want to know how much money in terms of Federal Reserve bills, paper currency, you can fit into a jet, the answer is $169 million. He abruptly left the country on Sunday following the arrival of Taliban soldiers to the city limits of Kabul. Actually, there's a little bit more to that. We talk about the monetary aspects. We'll tell you the timeline of what happened and how the Biden administration with Blinken and others were involved in this. He could see the handwriting on the wall. And so he grabbed everything that he could and got out of the country. He left, by the way, with more than just one carry-on bag. He had to leave a lot of it on the tarmac. Less than 24 hours before his departure, he appeared on national television in a pre-recorded speech. play this in a day. Give me enough time to get out of here. Claiming that he was working to reconstruct the Afghan military to reverse the Taliban's nationwide territorial gains throughout the summer. And, of course, it was last year that we pointed out that if you looked at the map, the Taliban a year ago already controlled everything except for some of the cities. And, of course, they rapidly took those remaining cities this summer, just the last several months. The Taliban has also promised to grant amnesty to Afghans who worked with the American government. But Afghanistan's first female mayor says that she's simply waiting for the Taliban to, quote, come kill me, unquote, since she has nowhere left to hide. And then this article that I mentioned earlier, the guy's name is Kevin Hurley. He wrote on RT, talking about the desperate daily phone calls he's been getting from abandoned friends in Kabul. He said he sees that makes him very angry at the empty promises of the West. Here's the two people. One of them is an interpreter. The other is a general. As he describes the interpreter, he says, I worked with Abdul until recently, a charming, good-looking, bright young man. He speaks perfect English. Always turned up, dressed impeccably in Western suits. He has a wife and three children, all living now in a neighboring country. They're out and they're safe. We often used to talk about the corruption of Ashraf Ghani's government. Abdul's biggest fear was not being blown up on the street, but being a victim of crime. He was worried that as someone who has been paid in U.S. dollars, either he or his children would be kidnapped by organized criminals who roam the streets of Kabul, or that he'd be robbed of his mobile phone and his wallet on the way home from work. He knew the police would not turn up if called, and if they did, they would want money before they did anything. Worse, he knew that if they found the robbers, they would pay the police for his name and address, and then they would come and get him, the robbers would. Abdul is more than just worried now. For the past couple of months, he's been asking me for help to get a visa. Now, wait a minute. I thought Biden, we got a clip of Milley saying, nobody saw this coming. And, of course, that's ridiculous. Everybody in the world saw this coming. And that was why you had Trump and Pompeo trying to organize some kind of withdrawal last year. But, of course, they didn't do it, did they? They put it off to the next one. And then he had this novel approach to an election based on his lockdown. I think Trump didn't want to be president, quite frankly. This is a hot potato he could hand off to somebody else. There was absolutely no reason that they couldn't have done an orderly withdrawal last year because we all knew that there was no military solution. But, of course, this interpreter knows it. This guy knew it. The general knew it. Everybody knew it. Especially the people who are there. But, of course, Biden didn't know it. It's totally unpredictable. Neither did Milley. Yeah, they're just lying to you. So he says, for the past couple of months, Abdul has been asking me for help to get a visa. The reality for him until now has been endless forms. Kind of what the American people are going through right now, trying to get out of the country. He has been, but this last time, he was angry and he was stressed, and he told me he was frightened because the Taliban were in town and all the local criminals had been released or escaped from the main prison. He told me that people were being robbed on the street, not by the Taliban, but by the ex-prisoners who had been released by the Taliban. He said, but fear of burglary is the least of his problems. The banks in Kabul have stopped operating. And Abdul had only $30 left when I last spoke to him. He had no food. It was already getting difficult to find. He knew that he would need to pay a lot for something to eat. On the phone, we discussed if there was any way that he could get across the border to another country. It seemed to be a hopeless cause. The crossing points are now controlled by the Taliban and are closed. And the embassies of surrounding countries are swamped with visa applications from desperate people. The airport isn't working either for international flights. I shook my head at Abdul's fate, knowing that I had advised him just 2 weeks ago to flee to Iran, where he has relatives, and now it is too late. He said, for me, it's doubly frustrating. I can't send him any money with the banks closed. I can't even courier cash to him. And then he talks about his friend, a senior Afghan general. He says, I'm no spring chicken, but this guy is even older than I am. He calls him Ibrahim, and he says he'd served in the last days when the Soviets were there, and he'd been trained by them. He had seen nearly 40 years of fighting and was still alive. As an old cop, what was fascinating for me was his explanation of the money being made by narco barons or warlords from opium. As I pointed out yesterday, if you look at the amount of money that the American military was just injecting in terms of weapons and things like that, it was about 10% of their gross domestic product. But the big part of their gross domestic product was the opium that was there. And that had nearly been eliminated by the Taliban, but after we went there, they became the world's supplier. They had north of 95% of the world's supply in some years, going up every year. North of 95% of the entire world supply of opium. So he said, you had narco barons or warlords making money from opium, whether it was by growing it, by running illegal checkpoints to tax, quote-unquote, other criminals. He drew out for me the criminal networks and the lines of influence, and he told me of government ministers' apartment blocks and of houses in Turkey and Dubai in the U.S. and in Europe, all paid for by the siphoning off of donor aid money. It was from Ibrahim that I learnt how badly we had messed up in Afghanistan, and this was more than 3 years ago. Ibrahim told me how in the past the Afghan army had held out against the insurgencies in the days of the Soviets. He outlined the size and how well equipped the army was now, and that it had been quite well trained with officers going abroad to NATO schools. And then he told me, but they will not hold. They will not fight. We will lose. I asked him why. He said the government is corrupt, and the men will not die for them. I asked Ibrahim last week if he was going to try to get out. He said, well, my family is here. I'm a patriot, and I will not leave my country. But there's a lot of people who are leaving, and do we know who they are? As you heard the CBS News report, they said all these people getting on the planes, they don't have any ID, they don't have any passport. We have no idea who they are. And now, because this is a disorderly fire drill, not actually a fire drill, the fire is actually going. Because of this, we don't know who these people are. As I pointed out yesterday, we're going to have north of 80,000 people brought into this country. A lot of these people deserve to have asylum because they worked and helped the Americans. But what about the rest of these people? How many terrorists need to come over in order to get a foothold in this country, in order to do something? Remember, as I pointed out yesterday, the one of, if not the largest, terrorist attack we had, the Pulse nightclub shooting down in Orlando, was carried out by an Afghan. And so let's, by all means, just bring everybody in without vetting them, without worrying about COVID, without worrying about, because I'm not worried about COVID. But it's just another example of the hypocrisy of this Biden government, because yesterday in his press conference, all he did was lecture Republican governors who were pushing back against mask mandates. And then he walked away without taking any questions because he's moved on to the next war, the war against the American people, and bringing in a new refugee wave of unvetted people is an important part of that war against the American people. Even Emmanuel Macron is pulling back and saying, whoa, whoa, Europe has to protect itself against this new refugee wave. But not America. Nobody is saying that in America. Not even the Republicans are saying that in America because they're afraid that they're going to, they don't want to be seen as betraying the people that worked with them. So they're going to be quiet about that as well. So bracing for a new refugee wave akin to the 2015 crisis, Turkey is expected to feel the shock first. The past decade alone has seen some 600,000 Afghans settle in Turkey. All the while, a mass wave of Syrian refugees there as well. Many are still along Turkey's southern border, over 3 million of them there. The first European leader out of the gate to warn about what is coming is French President Macron, who surprisingly, in a blunt comment on Monday, warned that Afghanistan is about to once again become, quote, a sanctuary for terrorism, and that something needs to be done to stem the immigrant flow. Speaking on Monday in a televised address from his summer residence, he described the situation in Afghanistan as, quote, an important challenge for our own security. We must anticipate and protect ourselves against significant irregular migratory flows that would endanger the migrants and risk encouraging trafficking of all kinds. And so that's exactly what the U.S. is not doing. And we are, again, putting Americans last if we do anything for them at all. While we're talking about what happened with the money, let me get into this aspect of what is coming into this country. It's not just what is happening with the central bankers and the presidents. You got the central banker who got out on a jet. You had the president who got out on a jet with a lot of cash, leaving a lot of it on the tarmac. But you have Palantir now buying more than $50 million of gold bars, taking physical possession. This is disclosed because they are publicly traded. And so you have the chief operational officer, Palantir, said that they have stockpiled $50.7 million in gold bars earlier this month. The filing also said they'd acquired technology startups, blank check companies, and even cryptocurrencies. Now, who is Palantir? In case you don't know, I've mentioned them many times before. Palantir was co-founded by Peter Thiel, the guy who did PayPal, and the current CEO, Alex Karp. Alex Karp has been a regular attendee at Bilderberg. He's very much inside. Not only that, but Palantir's major client has been the intelligence agencies and the Pentagram, sorry about that. And to the extent that they were even taking out massive amounts, a big ad campaign in the Washington, D.C. subways. Palantir is all about biometric surveillance and geospatial intelligence, primarily geospatial intelligence, to be able to map people's political and religious beliefs, just as Homeland Security is doing right now to you and I. And to doing that to all Americans, by the way. This is why, the left should not take any comfort in the fact that right now domestic terrorists are considered to be the opponents of Biden, because in the future, domestic terrorists could be the opponent of his opposite counterpart. They are labeling everybody, and it just depends on which group they're going to come after. But what they're doing is labeling everyone in terms of which group they're going to be in. And as we turn into a high-tech banana republic, that's the danger for all of us, regardless of what our political beliefs are. But, of course, right now, the people who are out there setting this up and creating their list of enemies, dissidents, who are people now, you get on that list if you're just against the mandatory vaccines. But when you see a company like this that does intelligence analysis that's deeply embedded at the heart of the intelligence agencies and the Pentagon, when they start buying massive amounts of physical gold, that says a great deal about what they see coming. That's why this is a very important study or article. They commented on this and they said, you have to be prepared for a future with more black swan events. In other words, something that is extremely rare that you did not anticipate. The company can take physical possession of the gold bars stored at a facility at any time with reasonable notice, they wrote. Palantir co-founder Joe Lonsdale was quoted not too long ago saying, quote, idiots are running the Federal Reserve. He was referencing the unconventional monetary policy that's helped to balloon the national debt by over $5 trillion since March of 2020. That'd be March the 13th, 2020. 523 days ago, when President Trump declared a national emergency, again, two things happened. The most important of those was not giving any authority to the governors who had already, in many cases, based on the Model State Health Emergency Powers Act, they had, many states had laws in effect to let governors do things without to act unilaterally with their own executive orders. So it triggered that. But even more importantly, it triggered the massive amounts of money. That was when the $5 trillion started. And that's how the government, and I'm really surprised as I pointed the finger at Trump and said, he's the one, and that's when he did it with that national emergency executive order. Had so many Trumpsters who criticized me and said, you can't blame him for that. It's the Democrat governors. And I said, well, clearly you don't even have a clue about how the federal government operates. They use this phony Federal Reserve paper as a carrot and as a stick to get people at all other branches of government to do exactly what they want. They'll withhold it from you if you don't do what they say, if you don't put the boys in the girls' bathroom. If you do it, they'll flood you with cash. That's how they work. It's a much easier process for them to do that than to go through and try to create a law and then try to defend it in court. They just bribe people because this is a corrupt government that is funded by a corrupt central bank that is completely untethered from reality, untethered from gold, as we pointed out last Friday on the 50th anniversary of Nixon untethering us from the gold standard when I had Tony Arterburn on. So, you know, when they're getting gold, maybe you ought to think about that as well. And putting money in cryptocurrencies because they have no confidence whatsoever. These people who are on the inside have no confidence on the Federal Reserve or the U.S. government. So they've increased the national debt by $5 trillion since March of last year. And now the cumulative debt is $28.5 trillion. And it has set the U.S. dollar on a collision course with a loss of reserve status, which is, you know, we're now, after 50 years after Nixon completely changed the basis of our currency, we're looking at that again. But many other things are happening that are going to make it much worse. What is remarkable is that the foreign holders of U.S. Treasury debt account for only a quarter of the U.S. national debt. In other words, foreigners are not interested in this. And I've said for the longest time, this whole Keynesian thing about how don't worry about the national debt, it's just money that you owe yourself. Well, that's getting to be kind of true because nobody else wants to own our debt. It used to be that, you know, we were on the hook to Saudi Arabia, to China, to Russia, a lot of other people, but they're getting out. They don't want to have this either. Mike Krieger of Liberty Blitzkrieg tweeted about Palantir's gold buying and their warning about, quote, another black swan event that is coming. He said, when the spooks tell you that a false flag is coming, a false flag is coming. And Palantir is not alone. As Peter Schiff points out, he said the Chinese gold demand has rebounded sharply in the first half of 2021. Which brings us back again to Afghanistan and what happened there with the central bank and with the president. This is also at Zero Hedge. Did the New York Fed confiscate $1.3 billion in Afghan gold, striking revelations from the Afghan central bank chief? They said the cash holdings that they had were worth about $362 million. They have now blocked that. And here is a bit of the timeline. So, first, the reserves that we had in Afghanistan were approximately $9 billion as of last week, but this does not mean that we held $9 billion physically in our vault. As per international standards, most assets are held in safe, liquid assets, such as treasuries and gold. And so they gave a breakdown of how this was distributed. And he said, given Afghanistan's large account deficit, the currency was reliant on obtaining physical shipments of cash every few weeks. On Friday morning, now here's where it gets very specific. On Friday morning, I received a call notifying me that there would be no further U.S. dollar shipments. We were expecting one on Sunday, the day that Kabul fell. On Saturday, banks placed very large U.S. dollar bids as customer withdrawals accelerated. For the first time, I therefore had to limit U.S. dollar access to both banks and dollar auctions to conserve remaining DAB dollars. On Saturday evening, President Ghani spoke with Secretary Blinken to request dollar shipments to resume. In principle, it was approved. Again, it seems ridiculous in retrospect, but he did not expect Kabul to fall by Sunday evening. In either case, the next shipment did not arrive. Seems like our partners had good intelligence as to what was going to happen. So here's the timeline. On Friday and Saturday, they're talking to Blinken with the Biden administration. Say, hey, we desperately need some, you know, you haven't sent us some cash. You've got to get that to us right away. They promised to get it on Sunday, and then it did not arrive on Sunday. And that just happened to be the day that the president grabbed all the cash that he could get, all more cash than he could fit in his plane, and bugged out. And now the central banker is bugging out. So we had this interview yesterday with George Stephanopoulos and Biden. Biden, I guess, assuming that this operative from the Clinton administration, Stephanopoulos, is going to give him a friendly interview. But the left is pretty peeved about this as well. Listen to this little excerpt.
When you look at what's happened over the last week, was it a failure of intelligence, planning, execution, or judgment?
Look, I don't think it was a failure. Look, it was a simple choice, George. When the Taliban, let me back it, put it another way. When you had the government of Afghanistan, the leader of that government, getting in a plane and taking off and going to another country, when you saw the significant collapse of the Afghan troops we had trained, up to 300,000 of them, just leaving their equipment and taking off. That was, you know, I'm not, that's what happened. That's simply what happened.
But we've all seen the pictures. We've seen those hundreds of people packed into a C-17. We've seen Afghans falling.
That was 4 days ago, 5 days ago.
What did you think when you first saw those pictures?
What I thought was we have to gain control of this. We have to move this more quickly. We have to move in a way in which we can take control of that airport. And we did.
So you don't think this could have been handled, this actually could have been handled better in any way? No mistakes?
No, I don't think it could have been handled in a way that we're going to go back in hindsight and look, but the idea that somehow there's a way to have gotten out without chaos ensuing, I don't know how that happens. I don't know how that happened.
So for you, that was always priced into the decision?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know how that happens. I don't know what you would do with that. As a matter of fact, I love Babylon Bee's take on this. Biden demands that whoever the president is, he should take full responsibility for this mess. Listen, folks, this is ridiculous, says President Biden. Who's running this country anyway? I demand accountability. The president must be held responsible for this debacle, whoever he is. Yeah, it's kind of interesting when we see this. And take a look at what Milley has to say.
However, the time frame of a rapid collapse, that was widely estimated and ranged from weeks to months and even years following our departure.
Yeah, right.
There was nothing that I or anyone else saw that indicated a collapse of this army and this government in 11 days. Central Command submitted a variety of plans that were briefed and approved by the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the Secretary of Defense, and the President. These plans were coordinated, synchronized, and rehearsed to deal with these various scenarios. One of those contingencies is what we are executing right now. As I said before, there's plenty of time to do AARs and key lessons learned and to delve into these questions with great detail. But right now is not that time. Right now, we have to focus on this mission because we have soldiers at risk. And we also have American citizens and Afghans who supported us for 20 years also at risk. This is personal, and we're going to get them out.
That's right. We got an emergency here, and I'm not going to take any questions about how this emergency developed. Well, nobody knew that this would happen, that they would fall in 11 days. Well, I guess maybe the Afghans were saying, nobody knew that the Americans are going to bug out of the biggest military base that they had, Bagram, in the dead of night, not tell anybody at all. I mean, it's like, and leaving everything behind. I want to talk a little bit about what they left behind in terms of some very sensitive biometric equipment that was left behind. A lot of other indications of things that were left behind there at Bagram Air Force Base. Not just very, very expensive medical equipment, lots of weapons that were left behind. I mean, if you're going to leave weapons behind, I'm sure that was just left behind for the Afghan army. But what did that tell the Afghan army about America's trustworthiness, about their commitment, when they just sneak out of the military base in the dead of night, as the Onion had joked about 10 years earlier? I mean, the pentagram is a joke. It's an absolute joke. Former spook warns this is one of the most dangerous, unpredictable times in history, and we're going to be talking to Joel Skousen about that. I want to get his take on not only what's going on there, what's about to happen, what's going to happen with the people coming back, but also the geopolitical issues. This guy lays this out a little bit. Brian Dean Wright, a former CIA ops officer, says former U.S. intelligence colleagues are contacting him. He said they're angry. They're deeply worried about what has happened in Afghanistan. He said there's nearly universal belief that America and the world are in for the most dangerous, unpredictable times in modern history. And I would not let the CIA off the hook. I mean, this is the CIA's war. This is the CIA's false flag that got us into this war. This is the CIA running and manipulating this stuff. They're trying to pass the buck over to the current administration. And they deserve responsibility for that. But as I said before, this is like a hot potato thing. Here, you hold it. No, it's yours. No, you, it's yours. Afghanistan has shown the world, enemies and allies alike, that our military and intel assets are largely irrelevant because we cannot deploy them successfully. They will become emboldened and covert, both covertly and overtly, that is, our enemies. A war over Taiwan and contested islands in the South China Sea and the East China Sea is now more likely. Russia will consider similar covert and overt moves. And he said the fear is that China and Russia will act in concert. Meanwhile, the American people are angry. They're tired of COVID, and they're divided. He says as Cold War III grows hot, America will need to quickly build up and work with foreign counterparts. But who will trust America after Afghanistan? So he keeps talking about America as if the government in Washington is America. As he pointed out, we're angry, we're tired of this COVID nonsense, and we're divided. I would say that Americans trust the federal government less than people abroad do, because we've been observing it up close for a long time. We see the corruption just as the people in Afghanistan saw the corruption of their government. And so, yeah, the government, more specifically the Pentagram, is isolated, alone, and discredited, even in their own country, here in America. Who believes that we have the leadership to use our military might well? Who will trust us when we say we will stand with you? Well, certainly not Americans, that's for sure. There's also the nightmare of tactical weaponry that is now awash in Afghanistan because we just left it everywhere, along with a lot of other sensitive equipment. In the hands of the Taliban and soon on the global black market, these arms will fuel chaos around the world for decades. The Pentagon has no idea where this stuff is, and they have no plans to destroy it. And that was another part of the press conference that I didn't focus on. They asked them two things in terms of what they were going to do. I played the one clip for you where they were talking about, are you going to go get the Americans? Well, we don't have any way to go round them up. They're kind of on their own. And the other thing they asked him was, well, what are you going to do about weapons? You're going to get back some of these weapons? Well, I don't know. You know, we got an emergency right now. We got to take care of this. Our house is on fire. So we'll get back to you on that. Finally, if Afghani refugees pour into the U.S., there are profound implications for security, for culture, for the economy, and for politics. Exactly. As I was saying before, he says, are they properly vetted? You heard the reports from CBS. No ID, no passports, nothing. We don't know who these people are. So, of course, they're not properly vetted. We have no idea who they are. And so how can we know if they're friendlies or hostiles? Do they hold Western tolerant values? And he puts it in here, regarding women and gays. What about Christians? They're executing Christians now, left and right, but of course nobody cares about that. Do they bring any skills or education? And which party will they vote for? I'm sure that's the one thing that these corrupt people in Washington care about. And he finishes by saying, Biden is a corrupt old man. Impeachment, however, is a long shot. Harris is an unpopular paperweight. And the legislature is a feckless cabal of empty suits. America is rudderless. And the world now knows it. I was never in favor of an American empire. I was never in favor of America being the world's cop. And what we have done is we put ourselves in an untenable, unsustainable position. And it's more important to me what is happening here domestically. And that's an even bigger problem. And they're going to create even bigger problems domestically with what they're doing with these unvetted people that are kind of coming in. It's going to be a big economic and political and safety issue. These people who want to take away every one of our liberties in the name of safety. And they don't care a whit about our safety. The White House is very defensive as you have the very, very young spokesman, Jake Sullivan. He's one of the youngest national security advisors that we've had. He said, we believe our commitment to our allies and partners are sacrosanct and always have been. Well, we're not buying it, actually. Chinese state media had this to say in an op-ed on Global Times. This is a Chinese state paper. They said, abandonment by an imperialist U.S., it is quite natural for a gambler to quit and cut their losses when bets and investments go south. I guess they've been watching old reruns of Kenny Rogers, you know, the gambler. You got to know when to fold them. And you got to know when to hold them. You got to know when to run away, which is what the Pentagram did. Modern American expeditions, they go on to say, the Chinese Global Times. Modern American expeditions, as both were and are, still fueled by opportunism, not necessity. See? And I agree with that. Using factual history as a guide, will the fate of Taiwan be any different? So they're now using this as a way to not so covertly but overtly threaten Taiwan as well. A former advisor, and it's not just the Chinese, a former advisor to the UK Prime Minister also tweeted out, it's time to wake up and smell the coffee. The lesson for Europeans is clear. Whoever is president, the U.S. is unlikely to offer the same support that it used to in parts of the world where its vital interests are not involved. And they will ask, will you fight for us? Will you fight with us, I should say. And I got to say, what's bad about that? Why should we fight for things that are not in our vital interest, number one? Number two, why should we go to war and kill people that have not attacked us. It is illegal, unconstitutional, immoral to do preemptive attacks, and that has been the basis of our government my entire lifetime, frankly. I was born after World War II. General Milley, as you heard, says nobody expected this in 11 days. I've previously said from the podium and in sworn testimony before Congress that the intelligence clearly indicated multiple scenarios possible. One of those was an outright Taliban takeover following a rapid collapse of the Afghan security forces and the government. Another was a civil war. The third was a negotiated settlement. However, the time frame of rapid collapse that was widely estimated and ranged from weeks, months, and even years following our departure. Nobody believed that. Nobody believed that. No. So now the Taliban is declaring general amnesty for former officials in their first statement of governance. So do you believe the Taliban? I don't believe the Taliban either. I don't believe the pentagram, and I don't believe the Taliban because, as I showed you before, this is what it looks like as they're surrounding houses and going in and finding people. You got all of these guys in the street on the ground, guy with a RPG, weapons. They're got people up against the wall. Yeah, you believe this? You believe that they are going to offer amnesty for former officials? There are rumors, they said. Rumors. I just showed you the pictures, not a rumor. That the Taliban are going door to door. Just showed you the pictures with a kill list looking for Afghan Special Forces soldiers or anyone who was involved with the U.S. And so yesterday, as I pointed out, we had Biden doing his little PR about this. He held a press conference. Everybody wanted to hear what he had to say, and he had a prepared speech, and he used it to attack Republican governors who were attacking mask mandates being pushed by rebellious school officials, school boards, principals, and so forth, just like these rebellious officials are pushing critical race theory, intersectionality, and it's not critical race theory, it's just critical racism is what it is. It's just CR. No theory about it. It is just racism. But these school officials are going to do whatever they want. They're rebelling against any authority, and that's what we're seeing happening throughout the country. People rebelling against authority. The government officials rebelling against the legal authority. The law, the Constitution, and also what the people want to have. So you have Biden. Here's the conclusion of his press conference.
We just need to finish the job. With science,
not
with
in
facts,
Afghanistan,
and with
though.
Confidence. And together, as the United States of America, we'll get this done. God bless you all, and may God protect our troops. Thank you.
Yeah, there he goes. Just walks off. And I want you to hear Neil Cavuto's comments. He's got the very end of that, just the very end of this, as he turns around and walks off.
Wow, that is a bit of a stunner. You know, Afghanistan imploding, panic at the Kabul airport, and the president doesn't even touch on it or take any questions having anything to do.
Yeah, that's right. I'm heading to Disney World. I mean, Camp David. And as all this is happening, Gavin Newsom, who was not looking too good in the polls in terms of recall election, somebody asked him if the fallout from the withdrawal in Afghanistan would complicate whether or not Biden would be the right person to campaign with ahead of this recall election. And Gavin Newsom said, I'm incredibly proud of Joe Biden. I'm incredibly proud of President Biden. I'm incredibly enthusiastic to have his support on a no vote. And I look forward to him coming here. And maybe he can get Kamala Harris. You know, she was formerly a senator. She's formerly a state attorney general. This should really help him quite a bit, except Kamala Harris has also vanished from public view. As Breitbart puts it, as the Afghanistan crisis engulfs the White House. So this is a guy who, as people are looking at San Francisco and other jurisdictions in California, where anyone can go into any store at any time and grab just under $1,000 and run and walk out the door. And if you stop them, you're guilty of assault and battery. So they just come take $1,000 of your stuff at a time. And then they can dump that off to somebody, come back in and do it again, fill up their cart. People are looking at this and saying, what is going on in this Yeah, and the violent crime as well. And so his response to that is to release somebody from prison who had buried a mentally disabled person alive. And so, and then he wants to have Biden campaign for him. Things are looking pretty good for Larry Elder, I would say. Especially because Larry Elder is making the center point of his campaign, wisely making the center point of his campaign, shutting down these pandemic rituals, shutting down vaccine mandates, shutting down mask mandates, shutting down the vaccine passports and all this stuff. You make that the central issue of your campaign, you're going to win, I think. And, you know, quite frankly, if you can't win by making that type of effort supporting liberty against this over-the-top draconian medical dictatorship, if you can't win, if people won't vote for you, if you make that the issue, then it's time, Larry, just to pack up your bags and get out of that state, because there is no hope left for California if they would reject that offer of freedom. So Kamala Harris was asked by Dana Bash, you know, well, Biden just made a really big decision, Afghanistan. Harris says, yes. Dana Bash says, were you the last person in the room? Harris, yes. And you feel comfortable? Harris, I do. See, she's really sharp. I imagine she interspersed some little laughs there. She has nothing to say. They're hand-feeding these softball questions to her. It's absolutely amazing how they're propping these puppets up. So the Taliban kills a woman for not wearing a burqa on the same day they vow to honor women's rights. It's disgusting to see the pictures of two women that I've seen shot and just lying in a pool of blood on the sidewalk with their family there. As Babylon Bee summarizes, Taliban agrees to protect every right that women have, which happens to be none at all. That's amazing. We'll protect all the rights that you have under Sharia law because you have none under Sharia law. And as I said before, all these photographs, they're allowed on Twitter. People who were there January the 6th, they're not allowed on Twitter. But the Taliban is, and so they can show pictures of themselves doing their funky dances and their bumper car rides and their merry-go-round rides. And as they say, we love women. Everybody falls for it. We'll be right back. Stay with us. The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project, to make sure the commoners own nothing, and the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. thedavidknightshow.com. All right, let's talk a little bit more about what has been left behind. And it's not just people, of course, but we're all going to talk about some of the people who've been left behind. But let's talk a little bit about some of the equipment that's been left behind and the implications for this. First of all, understand that we've now had, since Biden took over, we've now had the Department of Homeland Security talk about how those of us who disagree with them politically, those of us who exercise our First Amendment rights to assemble peacefully and to protest. They're not just coming after people who got violent, the small minority of the small minority. You know, there's a very small minority of the people who went to the Capitol building, and of that, there was a very small minority of people who got violent. But no, they're coming after people who were just in the area. They're putting people on no-fly lists who were just in the area. They were able to find that out because of things like Palantir and these other pieces of software that they have to monitor your phone, your location. They've been doing this for a very long time. So earlier this year, you have Homeland Security revealed their plans to declare their political opposition to be, quote, suspected domestic extremists. And we've seen how this works out with a couple in Alaska who were just short of being on a no-fly list. They got searched over and over and over again, delayed, hassled. They had a SWAT team come to their house. They were never even in the building, never even close to it. This, by the way, is from Information Liberation, Chris Minahan. Every indicator suggests that DHS Chief Mayorkas has followed through on those plans and has been rapidly expanding the regime's no-fly terror watch list by adding dissidents, people such as Nick Fuentes and others. According to a newly released report from security researcher Vladimir Diachenko, DHS last month had their highly secretive terror and no-fly watch list with nearly 2 million so-called suspected terrorists on it exposed on the open internet without a password or any other authentication required to access it. Now, let's think about a couple of things in that sentence there from Vladimir Diachenko. First of all, the fact that there is a no-fly list is an abomination for anything other than a banana republic, anything other than a Soviet or Nazi-style government. So that, first of all, tells you the no-fly list has been around for a while, and it is an abomination. But, of course, the Democrats want to expand this. They want to have a no-buy list. They want to put people who are unvaccinated now on the no-fly list. And when you get on the no-fly list, that is something that is done by a secret hearing, a star chamber process. If you go back to the oldest understandings, you know, we can go back 500-600 years to where people realize that you don't want to have inquisitions, you don't want to have secret trials. That's why we have the things that we do have in the Bill of Rights. You want to be able to know what the charges are against you. You want to be able to call witnesses in your defense and to have a process where you can defend yourself against that, a due process. But all of that is denied under the no-fly list. And they want to extend that. People who can't buy guns. And they want to punish people and put us on the list if we don't take their injections that they demand. And the other thing that's interesting about this is that it's 2 million people. 2 million people. Now, not all of those are going to be domestic. Question is, how many of those are domestic? And then we see, at the same time, and this is why Terry Gilliam was so spot on with Brazil. You had a brutal regime where they were unbelievably incompetent. If you've ever seen that movie, I mean, you got everything doesn't quite work. It was all kind of steampunk, 1940-ish technology that they added a little bit of automation and computer stuff, but it doesn't quite work. And they've got trying to get bigger screen TVs. Well, what they did, they put a Fresnel lens in front of it and all this other kind of stuff. And they're still using electric typewriters that don't quite work. And that pretty much sums up what happens with these dictatorships. That was a good characterization, actually, of what you would see in the Soviet Union and what you're seeing right now. It's kind of funny that when you become a political dictatorship, the wheels start to come off of things in everyday life. And so the wheels have kind of come off of these dictators at the Department of Homeland Security. They had their list of 2 million people on the open internet, without a password, without any authentication there. And so When Vladimir Dyachenko sees this, he contacted them. Said, oh, by the way, you know, this is just what somebody people typically do when they find a vulnerability with a piece of software or something in the Microsoft operating system or something. They get on the phone and say, hey, you got this. And I want to let you know, I don't know if anybody else has noticed this yet, but you need to fix this as soon as possible. And they'll say, thanks, don't tell anybody. We'll get that fixed right away. And that wasn't really what happened with DHS. These authoritarian idiots. The watch list came from the Terrorist Screening Center, he said, a multi-agency group administered by the FBI. The TSC maintains the country's no-fly list, a subset of the larger watch list. A typical record in the list contains the full name, citizenship, gender, is that physical sex or your imagination? I'm not sure. Date of birth, a passport number, a no-fly indicator, and much more. As a matter of fact, you look at these different fields. There is a TSC watch list ID, a citizenship field, as I mentioned, a no-fly indicator. And then the data also had a couple of categorical fields he said I was unable to identify, including something marked tag and another one called nomination type. And the third one, selectee indicator. He said the database was found on a Bahrain IP address, not on a U.S. one. So he says on July 19th, the exposed server was indexed by search engines, Census and ZoomEye. I discovered the exposed data on the same day, and I reported it to DHS. The exposed server was taken down 3 weeks later. On August the 9th. It's not clear why it took so long. I don't know for sure whether any unauthorized parties accessed it. So what data was exposed? He says the exposed Elasticsearch cluster contained 1.9 million records. I do not know how much of the full TSC watch list it stored, but it seemed plausible that the entire list was exposed. So despite being told, immediately alerted to this, as Chris Minahan puts it, despite being immediately alerted to the astonishing act of incompetence, they took 3 weeks to take the database down. That means the entire list could potentially be in the hands of foreign adversaries while American dissidents are being blocked from even knowing if you're on these lists and being forced to go through legal hell to fight to get off the list in order to get their rights back. He goes on to report, they say, in terms of talking about this, Dyachenko says there have been several reports of U.S. authorities recruiting informants in exchange for keeping their names off the no-fly list. And some of the past or present informants' identities could have been leaked. Oh, that'd be a shame. The Terrorist Screening Center was set up by the FBI in 2003. It shares information with suspected terrorists with the following U.S. federal agencies: the Department of State, the Department of Defense, the TSA, and Border Patrol. And now, of course, they've shared it with the world. So, no notification, no explanation if you're on this list, no ability to challenge it, no way for you to get off of it. You can tell that you're on the list when they won't let you fly, but there's no way to get off of it. It's one of the first stories I covered back in 2012 when I came to InfoWars. As Chris Minahan points out, odds are it's not a coincidence that this list happened to be exposed right as Mayorkas appears to be expanding it for use as a social credit score system to punish the regime's political opposition. Just last week, The Atlantic, and The Atlantic is a mouthpiece for these NATO neocons. The Atlantic published an article from a former Obama DHS official calling for all unvaccinated people to be put on the no-fly list. That makes you a domestic terrorist, according to the Biden Homeland Security people. Headline, unvaccinated people belong on the no-fly list, and subtitled, beyond limiting the coronavirus's flow from hotspots to the rest of the country, allowing only vaccinated people on domestic flights will change minds, by Juliet Kayyem. And I've talked about that as well. And, of course, the administration points out, well, we're not ready to do that just yet. But wait, we're going to make that happen. In the same way that they have said that about firearms confiscation. So it's not just their database of political enemies and some real terrorists that are on there. But again, going back to Afghanistan, what else did they leave behind besides massive amounts of weapons and ammunition and vehicles and military equipment and medical equipment? Well, they also left behind military biometric devices. And, of course, laptops, too. We're going to see this as well. You know, laptops, you can see this stuff when you look at the pictures. When they left Bagram in the dead of night, and there's no excuse for this, and that was the thing that pointed out, when did that happen? A month ago? 2 months ago? When that happened, it was pretty clear to everybody worldwide, but especially to the people in Afghanistan who understood that. They were trying to get out of Dodge as fast as they could. There was such a mass exodus of troops out of Afghanistan when the U.S. left the biggest military base in the dead of night without informing the Afghans. They know that there's not going to be any help coming from the Americans. The Americans aren't going to do anything to aid them, and so they just all started leaving the country at that point in time. But what they left behind was truly astounding. And here's one of the things that's left behind. And the reason I talk about this is because you need to understand how the government has been preparing for the war that is now their central focus. As you saw Joe Biden giving the press conference yesterday, what was he more concerned about than Afghanistan? Yeah, he's getting a lot of criticism for what's going on in Afghanistan, but he's really more interested in the war with the American people. He's at war with the American people. We are domestic extremists if we question the crooked elections that they have on a regular basis. They're always crooked. This one was exceptional. And Trump is to blame for it as much as anybody. But it was crooked, and it's legitimate to question that. I don't see any solutions being offered by Trump or the Republicans. That's the big problem with it. But they really are not getting to the core issues of this stuff, which began with ballot access. The Republicans don't want anybody other than a Republican and a Democrat on the ballot either. That's where it begins. But as they look at this and they start preparing for how they're going to go to war with this, that includes those of us who are not vaccinated. They're going to shut us down like we're terrorists, put us on a no-fly list. And that was what he was focused on. So when we look at what happens abroad, as Madison said, the instruments of defense abroad become weapons of tyranny at home. It's one of the reasons why they didn't want to have a standing army. But we do have a standing army, just like they do in Australia. You can see how that army is standing now in people's throats, how that army of cops in Australia is smashing people in the face with their boots, just like George Orwell said. That's the future, he said. And it will be the future if we don't push back against this. So if you want to know what the future is, if you want to know what they're concerned about, it is their war with the American people domestically. And part of that is to have a database of who's a terrorist and who isn't, who's an enemy of the state and who isn't. And you can see how this unfolded in Afghanistan. And now the Taliban has the military equipment, the biometric equipment, the devices that they were using in the field. Pull up a picture, Travis, of that article showing a soldier who is putting this device on somebody's face. There it is. It's kind of like he's getting an eye exam, except not an eye exam, it's biometric. It's looking at the iris and it's looking at other things. And they can just do this in the field. It's wireless. This is something by the Joint Special Operations Command. An official told The Intercept that the Islamist group, the Taliban, confiscated these devices. They call them a HIDE device. Handheld Interagency Identity Detection Equipment. And so among many of the other things that they left behind when they ran out of town with their pants on fire were these things. They contain identifying data such as iris scans and fingerprints, as well as biographical information. Now, of course, they can't do anything with that if it's not connected to the database. But there are portals into the database that exists in Pakistan and other places. And, of course, as they bug out of town, how long have these things been in the hands of the Taliban and others to be able to go through that database? Because it does give them access to the database. The Hive devices use data collected to create a portfolio that can then be imported into the biometrics automated tool set, BAT, BAT. So these guys are Batmen, I guess. They can create a digital dossier. This is the part of it that I'm more concerned about. I'm not so much concerned about the fact that the Taliban has got access to some device that they may or may not be able to get access to a database. I'm more interested in the capability of our military to do this biometric surveillance in a database, because this is what this is going to look like. You know, we have, and the reason I mentioned this on Friday and again yesterday, or maybe it was Monday, when I talked about all the stories that are out there about the counterfeit passport, vaccine passport cards. You realize when they do stuff like this, they've done this type of thing with income tax for a long time. Typically, they would have just before April the 15th and a week or two before that happened. They would always pick a high-profile celebrity, you know, somebody like Wesley Snipes. And they would have been on this case for a while, whether the person was guilty or not. They would hold that until right before it was tax time. And they would make a big deal of publicly crucifying this person as a warning to everybody else. And now we're seeing that about these vaccine cards, which tells me that as you see these different jurisdictions in New York and in Los Angeles, as they're pushing for a vaccine apartheid, you also see at the same time all of these news articles being pushed out by the mainstream media, by the Drudge Report, talking about, oh, and look, we've got people who we caught trying to, you know, shipping around these cards, which, again, there's nothing to the card. It would be the data that was on there that would be significant. But they're putting that out there because they know that they're getting ready to not only use the vaccine passports, but to really crack down on people. And when you look at this, and when you look at what they have been doing in Afghanistan with these Hive devices, these wireless, handheld biometric scanners that they can just set up a line of people with the police, and it's like a digital version of show me your identity papers. Except that you don't have any papers, and there's no way to fake this thing anyway. They've got the database, all the biometric information. So besides tracking insurgents, the Pentagon was also reportedly keen to use the device to gather unique data on 80% of the Afghan population. See, they weren't just after terrorists, even in Afghanistan. And they're not after even just their domestic political enemies here in America either. And this is what this will look like. They're going to have these types of devices here in America. It'll be a show me your papers type of thing, but it'll be show me your iris. Show me, your earlobes or whatever else it is that they want to identify you by. Your gait, the way you walk. We processed thousands of locals a day. We had to ID. We had to sweep for suicide vests, weapons, intel gathering, etc. Hive was used as a biometric ID tool to help ID locals working for the coalition, but also people who were their enemies, and also just everybody, 80% of the population. An unidentified U.S. Army Special Operations source told The Intercept that the Taliban, quote, does not have the gear to use the data, but warned that Pakistan's inter-service intelligence spy agency had the additional equipment required to process the data from Hive devices. And so what does this look like? Pull up the slide there, Travis. This is a slide about introduction to biometric and biometric systems. How does the biometric technology support your mission? Well, they do fingerprint matches. They do iris. They've got a lot of different things here. And as soon as they put you into their domestic ID papers, it's going to pop up your name, your date of birth, your rap sheet, the whole bit. And they say, we've got two types of biometrics. We can have physiological and behavioral. And so they talk about the under the physiological, scroll down one or two more, under the right there, physiological. Of course, it's an iris scan, fingerprints, palm prints, your hand and finger geometry, facial recognition, voice pattern, retina scan, different from iris scan, retina scan, iris scan. They got, you know, multiple ones. DNA, your odor. They can identify you by smell. Your earlobe, by sweat pore, and by your lips. And then under behavioral, they have your signature, your keystroke, they have speech recognition, and then gait, as in walking. So all of that. And it's on an untethered, portable, biometric collection. It is your Nazi digital, show me your papers. So as they talk about this, what is BAT? Well, we're going to collect, we're going to save, we're going to query, we're going to search a database that they said is currently 1.2 million and growing. Current uses, first one, of course, is going to be anti-terrorism. But then they go down at the bottom, it says population census and control. Population census and control. And finally, civil military operations. What is a civil military operation? Well, we have a standing army of cops. I don't know exactly what they mean by that, but it seems to me like those two things are two opposite things, aren't they? But they're putting them together. You know, it's kind of like jumbo shrimp or military intelligence. We have this report. It's not just Americans with their high-tech portable, untethered biometric surveillance devices that they happen to leave behind as well. But we now have the Taliban going around, and as they search people, they take your Big Brother device, your phone, and they look on your phone to see if they can find a Bible on the phone. And, you know, a lot of people do that. It's very, very convenient. I do that. I don't have to worry about leaving my Bible behind on the bench. Plus, I can pull up multiple translations that you can have on it. But they're looking at people's phones to see if they have Bibles on their phone or anything else that would indicate that they're a Christian. As Breitbart points out, the Taliban is looking for anybody that they consider to be violating Islamic law. This is, you know, what they had done for years until the U.S. went there 20 years ago. They persecuted political dissidents, like the federal government. They persecuted religious minorities, like the federal government. They went after women, unlike the federal government. Our federal government is different. See, we're completely different. Our federal government comes after men. And anybody that is considered to violate their cultural norms. According to an organization that broadcasts Christian programs to churches and Christians in the Middle East and North Africa as a satellite, they call it SAT-7, the Taliban is using, quote, spies and informants to persecute the Christian minority in the country. But we're hearing from reliable sources that the Taliban demand people's phones, and if they find a downloaded Bible on your device, they will kill you immediately. Kill you immediately, said SAT-7, North American President Dr. Rex Rogers. He told that to Religion News Service. He said it's incredibly dangerous right now for Afghans to have anything Christian on their phones. And the Taliban have spies and informants everywhere else. But they can just search through your phone. And, of course, that is also a key thing that our government is doing, too, to search through your phone, even without the Taliban in power. And this is what's key. What was it like for Christians when the U.S. government was there and we had we were rebuilding the country, we're doing nation building? What kind of a nation did the U.S. want to establish in Afghanistan? Well, it was, while we were there, not only the largest supplier of opium throughout the world, but it was the second most dangerous place for Christians, behind only North Korea. according to a 2021 version of Open Doors World Watch List. That's the kind of government that we were allied with. And we had no problem with that, the American government, the Pentagon, the Pentagram. Open Doors is a nonprofit that monitors Christian persecution and aids its victims. The U.S. State Department similarly described the now former Afghan government as extremely hostile to Christians. Christians in Afghanistan were forced to practice their faith underground. They had to meet with small groups to worship. Christians also faced significant legal persecution under the U.S.-backed government. Apostasy, or the crime of renouncing Islam for a different faith, was punishable under our U.S., under the U.S.-backed government of Afghanistan. That government that we helped to put in the name of rebuilding the country. The crime for renouncing Islam was punishable by death, imprisonment, or confiscation of property. Anyone who preaches another religion is subject to the same punishment. After conversion to a different religion, an individual was given 3 days to recant before facing punishment for apostasy. Quote, according to Sunni Hanafi jurisprudence, beheading is appropriate for male apostates, while life imprisonment is appropriate for female apostates, unless the individual repents. The State Department estimated that Christians and other minority religions made up only 0.3% of the population, adding that no reliable estimates of the Christian community exist. They said secret believers in Afghanistan are especially vulnerable. Prior to Taliban rule, they already had a difficult time living out their faith, as they had to keep it secret from their families for fear of being shunned or, worse, killed. This is the time for us to ask God to have mercy, not only on his people, but on this country as a whole. Which is why, even though I got this after the show on Tuesday, I didn't see this in time to talk about it yesterday. This is from a listener, Judith, who said, I just got this from a friend. Today, sadly, they confirmed the terrible news at this time. They can corroborate it. They said, please pray for the 229th Christian missionaries who have been sentenced to death tomorrow afternoon by Afghan Islamicists. Please pass this message on as soon as possible so many people will be able to pray. The message was sent by Judith Carmona, a missionary from Chihuahua who is in Africa. The whole planet united in prayer. If you can forward it, please join us in urgent prayer. Because the radical Islamic group has just taken a town called Quaragosh, I guess is how you pronounce that, I'm not even sure. It's the largest Christian city in Iraq, where there's hundreds of Christian men, women, and children who are being beheaded. That town has already been taken several times. And so when you see this, isn't it amazing? You know, we talk about the mark of the beast many times, right? The requirement to take something from the government in order to be able to buy, sell, to have a life, to travel, to work, to go to school. But also, in Revelation, you see, when he opened the fifth seal, I saw under the altar the souls of those who had been slain for the word of God that they had on their iPhones, and for the testimony which they held in their hearts, right? Not those two words I added. They cried with a loud voice, how long, O Lord, until you judge and avenge our blood on those who dwell on the earth? Which comes back to the government that we decided that we would instill and install, I guess is the right word, in Afghanistan and leave it there for 20 years until we just decided that we would run away at night when they weren't looking at one point in time. What does it say about us? We can point fingers at the Taliban. What does all of this say about the Pentagram? Well, if you go back to 2009, you got a story by Jake Tapper, ABC, at the time. What he was doing was grabbing a couple of things and trying to attack Christians in the military in Afghanistan. Bibles destroyed in Afghanistan by the U.S. military. This is on Free Republic at the time. On May the 4th, 2009, Al Jazeera ran a report suggesting that U.S. soldiers in Afghanistan may have been violating anti-proselytizing rules by distributing Dari and Pashto language New Testament Bibles, writes Jake Tapper. CENTCOM General Order No. 1 specifically forbids proselytizing of any faith, religion, or practice. And the report showed a service from approximately a year prior, in 2008, with the head U.S. military chaplain in Afghanistan, Lieutenant Colonel Gary Hensley, talking about the need to spread the gospel. He said, the special forces guys, they hunt men, basically. He said, we do the same thing as Christians. We hunt people for Jesus. We do. We hunt them down. We get the hound of heaven after them so we can get them into the kingdom. And that's what we do. That's our business. In another clip, Sergeant John Watt mentioned during a Bible study class, he said, my church collected some money to get Bibles for Afghanistan. They came and sent the money out. And he says, well, you can't proselytize, but you can give gifts. And he talked about how this worked in Iraq. He said, I bought a carpet, and then I gave the guy a Bible after I conducted my business. The expressions that I got from the people in Iraq were just phenomenal. They were hungry for the word. And so in response, now that was Jake Tapper's story. In response, the American Forces Press Service replied and said, what this is, taken out of context by Al Jazeera and by Jake Tapper, they said the clip shows one of these services with an American chaplain leading a religious service for American service members. In it, he spoke generically about the evangelical faith. That's all there was to it. He did not urge service members to go among the Afghan people and attempt to gain converts to Christianity, said the official. That was Al Jazeera and Jake Tapper trying to tamp that down. But, you know, quite frankly, yeah, that's what they were called to do as Christians. And to do that out of love for people, love and concern. Anyway, what it did show was a chaplain counseling the young sergeant who distributed the Bibles, telling him that it was against General Order No. 1. The chaplain confiscated the Bibles. None of them got off base. That happened in 2008. As a matter of fact, he did not just confiscate the Bibles, but a spokeswoman, Major Jennifer Willis, and of course this all happened at Bagram Air Force Base, where a decade later, the U.S. had to run away in the dead of night. God is not mocked by a country that despises him, by a pentagram that despises him. I can now confirm, she said, that the Bibles shown on the Al Jazeera clip were, in fact, collected by chaplains and later destroyed. They were never distributed. And so at the time, CBN News said, can you imagine if they had, because you might have Muslims in the army and they might have Qurans, and if they confiscated those Qurans, would they destroy them? Would they destroy the Qurans? Would they burn them like they did the Bibles? One person wrote and said, things like this really rile me. I remember I was informative in my opinion of the Islamic dictatorship. A lieutenant colonel having his family Bible taken from his bag during a customs inspection as we arrived at the airport in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, by the religious police. He technically was in violation of a general order at the time. I believe him when he said he really didn't think about it, since the Bible went with him wherever he went. However, the Bible was seized by the Saudis, not by the U.S. military, but he never saw the Bible again. He had kept family dates and a genealogy, and he admitted it wasn't smart for him to bring such an important Bible with him to Saudi Arabia, but it was his daily reader, and he always just had it with him. Yeah, we should know better, shouldn't we, than to take a Bible with us if we're a military soldier working for the U.S. government. I mean, you know. Walter Reed, then, at about the same time, again, this is 2008-2009 time frame, Walter Reed temporarily banned Bibles, reported by NBC. Walter Reed National Military Medical Center inadvertently banned them in a memo. No religious items, in other words, Bibles, reading materials, and or artifacts, are allowed to be given away or used or kept during a visit. How is Walter Reed that much different from the religious police in Saudi Arabia? How are we that much different? The memo was written by a group of people. It came from the desk of Colonel Norvell Coots, commander of Walter Reed Healthcare System. It was signed by his chief of staff. It was released on the date the region's two military medical centers were officially merged. These new bureaucrats, feeling the rush of power, decided that one of the first orders of business was to make sure no Bibles anywhere. Not allowed to be brought in, not allowed to be displayed anywhere. Walter Reed repealed the policy after Christian Organization Family Research Council brought it to the attention of several members of Congress, such as Steve King in Iowa and others. Who are these elected bureaucrats who think that they can ban the Bible? Who is responsible for this? And, of course, it wasn't just there. It was in Texas as well. You had a battle between the VA and volunteers from the American Legion and the Veterans of Foreign Wars. At Houston's National Cemetery, they barred any religious ceremonies at gravesites. They ignored denunciations by members of Congress as well as infuriated families. Calls resounded nationwide for the firing of the cemetery's director, but she remained in office. See, it's not just critical race theory, the Marxism, the hatred, the racism that's being pushed defiantly by these teachers, by these principals, by these school boards. It's not just the fact that they are pushing masks and other things. This is all of the bureaucracy, unelected, unaccountable to us, with its own agenda. Of course, that ban was then lifted. But then you had others. Another year later, we had it showed up again in other places. And this kind of percolated around for another 10 years. In 2019, in August of 2019, 2 years ago, the guy who was head of the VA for President Trump and the Trump administration, VA lifted a ban on Bibles. This was Robert Wilkie. He said as a kid, and he was the Veterans Affairs Secretary for President Trump, he visited a VA hospital at Christmas time. He said, one of my fondest memories growing up, we used to sing Christmas carols at the VA hospital in Fayetteville, North Carolina. He said something as simple and as decent as that was being stopped. With the support of the president, we said enough is enough. So he points out he grew up at Fort Bragg there in North Carolina, son of an Army artillery commander. He was in the Navy and the Air Force Reserves. He said, I was in my hometown. We have a beautiful chapel in the old VA hospital. I walked in and there were no Bibles. It had been stripped of all symbols of religion in the chapel. So the VA revised directives to permit religious literature, symbols, and displays. Following a string of incidents in recent years where you've had individual medical centers banned Christmas carols, chapels removed Bibles, chaplains faced restraints on religious expression. As a matter of fact, under the old regime, said Wilkie, you could not have religious texts in the chapels unless you brought them. The chaplains could not walk the halls seeking people to talk with. There had to be a specific request. The VA's actions undermine our Constitution, he said, which intentionally establishes, that's not what he said. This is what an organization, a lawyer for an organization that calls itself Freedom from Religion. Is that constitutional? Is that what America is about? Freedom from religion? No, America is about freedom of religion. What a difference a word makes. These are people who go everywhere trying to purge religion everywhere, but especially Christianity. So they said the Constitution intentionally establishes a secular government in order to preserve religious freedom, a right enjoyed by individuals. The government was based upon Christian principles, and what they wanted to avoid was to have an imposed denomination or sect that was going to be imposed on people from Washington. But that's exactly what is happening. With the Supreme Court and Washington, they have now imposed a religious belief, a sect that is characterized as secular humanism. They have now imposed that religious belief on everybody out of Washington. It's exactly the opposite of what these people, freedom from religion, are talking about. You know, it was another 40-some-odd years in Massachusetts that they still had state-established religions. I don't agree with that. But the bottom line is that the First Amendment had nothing to say about that. It didn't prohibit it there. It didn't prohibit it in Connecticut or other places where it persisted for decades. What it did was it prohibited the federal government from setting up a central religion. But now the federal government, with judicial supremacy, has done exactly that. And so this group has been going around trying to purge religion everywhere. and God laughs. We will be right back. Stay with us.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
Looking for better information? APSRadioNews.com features articles and commentary, along with audio from all the top news from around the world. APSRadioNews.com.
You know, as we talk about what has happened with this country, and a lot of people got on the domestic terrorist list because they had questions about the election. And you should have questions about the election, but as I've said many times, what we have seen this last time is just an escalation of typical corruption in an American election. I've been looking at this for over 35 years. I've been participating in it in the early days. I know where the corruption begins. It begins with access to the ballots. The next step is access to the debates. The Democrats and Republicans want to make sure they don't have any body, that you don't have anybody to vote for. They want to make sure that you vote against the other guy. And that's why there's so much hatred that has been engendered by these people. They don't give you anything. They don't stand for anything. They just stand against the other guy. And it's very easy to do that when you've only got two people. If you have somebody who wants to run negative, and you've got even a three-way race, people very quickly realize who the problem is. But if you've got a two-way race, both of them can run negative, and people don't understand that they're both a problem. And so when we take a look at this, Rebel News out of Canada says, well, once again, the Debates Commission has crafted rules to keep Rebel News out of the debates. The Leaders Debate Commission is trying to keep Rebel News from asking questions on behalf of our audience. That's typical as well. It's typical of candidates. It's typical of having any real reporters. You notice how when we have these debates, it's always the same questions being asked, usually even by the same reporters. They control the debate by controlling the questions. And so they don't ask anything that is of really any importance. You know, they'll ask about ancillary side issues that are not the central issue. It's one way to misdirect it. And so by doing that, by limiting who is allowed to be reporters on there and who is allowed to, even if you jumped over the extra hurdles that they put on there for third parties and independents, you can't get into the debate. So it's a common thing. And that's where it all begins. That's how we wind up not having anybody to vote for. But then it gets multiplied by no voter ID, by having electronic ballots, by having a mail-in election, which is what we added this last time, thanks to President Trump's lockdown and his refusal to push back against Fauci, his refusal to have public events or even a public nominating convention. And then, of course, they did nothing in the aftermath of it. But I think it's important to keep that in mind when we start to look at election corruption, because there's so many different aspects of it. And instead, what do you see being done by the pillow guy? Mike Lindell only wants to talk about one electronic voting company. And, of course, he doesn't talk about any details with that either. I don't think he's necessarily dishonest. I think he's deceived. I think he doesn't know what he's doing. But it's dangerous nevertheless. He's being run by these other people. People like Flynn sending him in to see the president and he walks out with a clipboard on it talking about martial law, and he doesn't even try to hide that. I mean, he's kind of an idiot. Just because you've got a lot of money doesn't mean that you know what you're doing. I always think about the song, If I Were a Rich Man, from Fiddle on the Roof. And he says he'd sit in the gate and everybody would ask him questions. And he goes, and it wouldn't matter if I was right or wrong, because if you're rich, they think you really know. And I feel sorry for Mike Lindell, because he's burning down his life, going down this rabbit hole as he's being given fed information by people like Flynn and others. The New York is going to be putting a Second Amendment case on the Supreme Court calendar coming up in November. It's going to be a very important Second Amendment case. New York law requires that anyone who wants to carry a gun in the state has to show a good reason for doing so. Where is that in the Constitution? Well, of course it isn't. The FBI allegedly told an informant in the Whitmer kidnapping plot to lie and to delete messages. Michael Hills, an attorney for Brandon Caserta, one of the six who's been charged in the alleged plot to kidnap Governor Whitmer, has claimed that the FBI told an informant to lie and to entrap group members. The FBI directed a man named Dan to lie to people in the group that he had infiltrated, possibly even implicate an innocent third party as part of his duties. And of course, as it's now been exposed, about half of the people involved in that were FBI informants. And it wasn't just kidnapping Whitmer. It was really more about storming the Capitol. And after this FBI manufactured and run sting operation, false flag, then the guy who headed this all up there in Michigan, the FBI office, they put him in Washington to just before all this stuff happened about the Capitol on January the 6th. So, yeah, it looks very suspicious, doesn't it? It all looks very suspicious. But what is even worse about this is what they have now found from the transcript, the text messages that they've now uncovered. The FBI was pushing their paid agent to actively recruit people into an overt act in furtherance of a conspiracy. And counsel has found further text messages between FBI Special Agent Impola and Dan. I don't know if Impola is the guy that they just arrested for beating his wife. I don't know if that's the same FBI agent or not. Dan indicated, telling Dan that he should destroy his text messages and instructing Dan to lie and to accuse an innocent third party of being a federal agent spy to the founder of the Wolverine Watchmen. And then Dan came back and said, copy that. Best thing to do is to deny and to accuse somebody else. Like Trent. The FBI is instructing a paid FBI informant, says the lawyer, to lie and to paint an innocent citizen as an undercover federal agent to a man they claim is the head of a domestic terrorist organization, who they claim is paranoid about being infiltrated by the feds, who they claim has bragged about tossing a Molotov cocktail into a police officer's house. I would just point out that this isn't anything new about this FBI. It was Mueller, when he was around the Boston agency, it was Mueller who had very close ties to Whitey Bulger. And as the FBI started getting close to Whitey Bulger, some other FBI agents, they framed some innocent people to keep Whitey Bulger doing what he was doing. So again, you had an FBI informant. He was an informant, but they also carved out certain things that he was allowed to do. They protected him as he engaged in a criminal activity, violent criminal activity. Mueller was at the very head of that there in Boston. And he was with the prosecutor's office at the time. And so they were protecting Bulger. At the same time, they were setting up innocent people. Now, as everything was coming to a head with the FBI coming after Trump and with Mueller being a key part of that again, Whitey Bulger, who had been in prison for a very long time and who was in very frail condition, was suddenly transferred to another prison. And upon arrival, he was met with some people even before they checked him in. He was met with some people who had locks, I think it was, and socks, you know, pieces of metal and socks that they used to beat him to death in his wheelchair. Wouldn't have been a cover-up for Mueller, would it? for doing the same type of thing these guys are doing in Michigan. This is the level of corruption of our government that we're looking at now. And these people are capable of anything. Yeah, and that's why I was saying, when talking about the way they're pushing out all this stuff about, oh, yeah, we got the vaccine passports, and we're going to make sure you can't even buy groceries. And so, you know, your appropriate response is, first of all, you know, the best thing you can do is get out of those areas. Get out of California. Get out of New York. Go somewhere where they're sane. If you wait too long, you may have to try to forge some papers to get out or whatever. And again, when I talked about that, talked about lying, it's a difference between defending yourself and doing it for your own gain like the FBI does, or for an agenda. It's just like, and I made the comparisons with murder. When you talk about killing somebody, it's never a good thing. It's never a good thing to kill. It's never a good thing to lie. But you can do that in self-defense, but you better be sure it's in self-defense or defense of somebody else's life. But, you know, both of those evils are... as Jesus said when gave the example of David breaking the ceremonial law in order to save his life and the men's lives with him to eat the bread that they found there. He said, I desire mercy, not sacrifice. He doesn't desire you to sacrifice your life to these people. So we got Senator Warren talking about child sacrifice, abortion. Says it's a right. This is an article from MRCTV.org, Guard Goldsmith, who I've interviewed, great guy, does great reports there at MRCTV. And he says, the fact that she would go on with Teen Vogue to trumpet the idea that abortion is a right and that we need it for democracy. And again, Guard correctly points out that we don't have a democracy, we have a republic. They were very careful to give us a republic. We do have democratic election of officials, but as I began with this segment, you see what happens when we don't even have legitimate debate or ballot access for people. You can forget about the democratic election of officials when you have that kind of garbage going on. But going back to the abortion issue, as he points out, she called it a right. She said, both voting and access to abortion are basic, and they're both about functioning of our democracy and about the protection of personal autonomy. So really, abortion is now about democracy? It's actually, they've tried to defend it in the past in terms of individual liberty. And I've pointed out, and Guard points out in this article, he says, well, first of all, the fetus is a human being. It's not your body. It's a different body. So this is not my body, my choice, as they said. But these people who are pushing this, people like Leanna Wen, the former CEO of Planned Parenthood, she's on all the time saying you don't have a choice about your body now when it comes to a experimental injection. But as he points out, upon conception, the human fetus has its own DNA, distinct from both parents. That's even before you get a heartbeat. The DNA is alive. It's a continuum from origin to demise. There is no break. There is no pause. There is no moment when the individual is not its own living entity, period. Period. I mean, clearly you can understand, as I pointed out in the past, half the time the baby is a different sex, a different blood type, but it's always a different DNA. That's an important point that Guard makes. And, of course, when we talk about that, you know, they have talk about the development of a baby. For the longest time, you've had the evolutionists, people like Carl Sagan would go on Johnny Carson, and he would talk about ontogeny recapitulates phylogeny, saying you're going to go through all these evolutionary stages. You know, you just recapitulate evolution as you're developing. And so, you know, at this stage, you're not killing a human being, you're killing a single cell organism, and then you're killing a fish, and then maybe you're killing a lower primate organism. Well, that simply isn't true. It's still being taught, by the way, even though it's thoroughly been debunked by empirical evidence. As soon as they could take pictures of the babies, they could see that wasn't the case. They could see that Ernst Haeckel had just made this stuff up. Ernst Haeckel was recapitulating evolutionary bunk for Charles Darwin. He had no clue. As a matter of fact, when we were able to travel, we went to the UK. We saw the Museum of Charles Darwin, or in the British Museum, they had a little shrine set up to him. They've got a big statue of him, and they've got personal effects that he had. You know what he had in terms of being able to do investigation, scientific observation? what we call empiricism. He didn't have a microscope. He had like a Sherlock Holmes magnifying glass. This is when you have tools like that and you're not able to do scientific observation, that's how you come up with the idea of spontaneous generation. You know, I just leave this glass here for a long time. All of a sudden, life just evolves out of the glass. Well, it was bacteria that was there all the time. It just got to be such a large quantity of it that you could see it with your naked eye or with your Sherlock Holmes magnifying glass. The guy wasn't a scientist. He didn't have any data. It's just like Fauci. Yeah, Fauci. Excellent article by Gard. And as he points out about the difference between democracies and republics, because, you know, they just worship the idea of democracies, don't they? James Madison said, democracies have ever been spectacles of turbulence and contention. They have ever been found incompatible with personal security or the rights of property. And they have, in general, been as short in their lives as they have been violent in their deaths. We're looking at a violent death coming up of this democracy. So this, I don't even know how to, you know, certainly we're not a republic. We're not a democracy because they don't listen to people. They don't have elections. We're kind of a fascist dictatorship, you know, run by people like this guy.
In fighting COVID under rules established by health experts, one would have to dismiss the views of highly educated and experienced scientists, people like Dr. Anthony Fauci or Dr.
Yeah, that's the appropriate spot. Just laugh these guys off the stage. Before we get Joel Skousen on to talk about what is happening throughout the world, geopolitical as well as preparing, and he is the go-to guy for that. This is just kind of a side article, and you know, we talk about technology, and technology doesn't always have to be bad. It's just that most of it is funded by the military-industrial complex, as Eisenhower pointed out, and they put it to evil uses. But here's an example, and it's kind of a heartwarming story. Val Kilmer, the actor, if you may remember, he had throat cancer, and he went through a very difficult time, and he lost his natural voice. And when I was growing up, I had a very, very, very old, I was very young, and I had a very, very old uncle who had been in World War I, and he'd gotten gassed, and he'd subsequently developed cancer, and they had to remove his voice box, and it was really bizarre. And he also liked to smoke. I mean, smoking may have been the ultimate cause of that, but he had this hole in his throat, and you couldn't hear anything that he had to say. And he had a thing that he could put up to his throat that would vibrate, and you could kind of hear it, but it was like a Cylon voice or something. And he would still smoke. He would take a cigarette and he would stick it in his throat. Breathe in is like, that's desperation there. But it was really strange. And so I was really drawn to this story about Val Kilmer. They came up with a program. It's driven by artificial intelligence. And you can hear his voice. What it does is it picks up what he's trying to say, but instead of turning it into kind of a Cylon type of voice, they took recordings of his voice, and they used the artificial intelligence to reconstruct that. Listen to what
this sounds
like.
We all have the capacity to be creative. We're all driven to share our deepest dreams and ideas with the world. When we think of the most talented creative people, they speak to us in a unique way. A phrase we often hear is, having a creative voice. But I was struck by throat cancer. After getting treated, my voice as I knew it was taken away from me. People around me struggle to understand me when I'm talking. But despite all that, I still feel I'm the exact same person. Still the same creative soul. The soul that dreams ideas and stories constantly. But now I can express myself again. I can bring these dreams to you and show you this part of myself once more. A part that was never truly gone. Just hiding away.
Isn't that a heartwarming story? I mean, great text, too. I mean, I'm so happy for him that he got his voice back. But I thought, and as natural and perfect as that sounded, I thought it might have been interesting if they would have done a different character voice. Remember this?
I didn't think you had it in you.
I'm your huckleberry. Why, Johnny Ringo, you look like somebody just walked over your grave.
Yeah, he's a great actor, isn't he? That was such a great character that he had from the movie Wyatt Earp. We're going to take a quick break, and we should be joined. I think we've got him. Do we have him on the line? Yeah, we got him on the line. We'll be right back with Joel Skousen to talk about geopolitical issues as well as what you can do to prepare for what is happening right now in America. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
Tell Alexa to add the APS radio skill and have access to the best channels anywhere, from country to blues, classic hits to news. APS radio curates incredibly diverse playlists for you to enjoy. Get details at APSradio.com.
All right, and joining us now is Joel Skousen. And, of course, you can find Joel Skousen's publication and his report, World Affairs Brief. You can find that at worldaffairsbrief.com. And very valuable information. Joel Skousen is the go-to guy for prepping. If you want to know where to go, and we've talked about this many times, and we're going to talk about what's coming on with the COVID, with the lockdowns, with the globalist plan domestically, and it's not just here, it's other places, but in the United States, Joel has a book about relocation, but he also has a book about preparing. And preparing your home to harden it against a lot of different types of threats. So we're going to talk to him about what kinds of threats we see here domestically. But I want to begin, because Joel is also an expert on geopolitical issues, I want to begin with the topic of the day that everybody is focused on so much, and that is Afghanistan. So thank you for joining us, Joel.
Well, it's good to be with you, David, as always.
You know, we're hearing, it's great to have you back, we're hearing Joe Biden and people in the Pentagon saying, who knew? We didn't know any of this stuff was happening. But, of course, everybody knew, didn't they? Especially you. You knew what was going on. But everybody could see this happening, especially when they bugged out of Bagram in the middle of the night and didn't even tell the other their so-called allies. But give us a take about what you think has happened in the last a few weeks in terms of Afghanistan and what is happening right now.
Well, David, this was a planned disaster, in my opinion. The Trump plan of withdrawal, military plan, was a pretty good one, frankly. Now, I'm not going to discuss it this way, the fact that we shouldn't have ever been in Afghanistan.
Yes.
I'm not buying the terrorism threat before or even now that they're trying to claim, but once you've put yourself into a country like that, invested $800 billion in training the Afghan army, which was a disaster, because you sort of realize that, you know, in a corrupt country where people are military officers because they buy their way in or they're part of a warlord, et cetera, they have no allegiance really to the nation as itself. And when those leaders bugged out, when the U.S. decided to leave, the leaders said, well, we're bugging out too. And, you know, what soldier, what peon soldier is going to stay around when there's no officers to direct them in terms of no strategy, no combined operations to go after the Taliban to stop them?
Yeah, that's right. They were leaving into Tajikistan by the thousands on a daily basis. So the Tajikistan sent 20,000 soldiers to the border to keep that from happening. I mean, they're just running for the hills, literally.
Yeah, and they took their weapons, some of them, you know, with them. They took their fighter planes out. One of them was shot down in Azerbaijan for illegally entering the country. You know, the president had to leave a whole bundle of cash on the tarmac because it wouldn't fit in the helicopter that he was leaving. I mean, this was just a disaster. But, you know, to say that we didn't know that this was going to happen is just baloney. As Lieutenant Colonel Schaefer, who advised the Trump administration, said, all the intelligence people told him this was going to be a disaster if you dumped the Trump military plan. The Trump military plan was you maintain Bagram Air Force Base, or military base, it's much more than an Air Force base, so that you have, which is just north of Kabul, so that you have a base of operations to be able to launch attacks if the Taliban start to resurge while you're doing an evacuation. And what you do is you go and you get all of the Americans out, you get all of your NATO people out before you start the military withdrawal. The military is the last people that you pull out.
Exactly.
Because they're there to provide security.
Yeah. And you know, you tell all the Americans that are there, make your way to these various places because, you know, you got X amount of time. They even had a date on it. They said, you know, we're going to get out first. It was going to be in May. Then it was going to be September 11th. So you got a date that you're telling everybody you're going to leave. It's not any big secret that you're going to leave. So you do it in an orderly way, and you give people a chance to make their way to the base and get out.
Well, and you have to provide security so that you don't have the Afghanis flooding the Air Force base. So they had this disaster of people jumping on airplanes and getting in the way of a taxiing aircraft. I mean, you just didn't have the troops. They depended on the Afghan security forces, which deserted their posts for the airport. But even then, you've got to control the entire Kabul area if you're going to secure the airport. Because how do people get to the airport? Right now, for example, the U.S. has troops sufficient to secure the airport. They cleared the runways. They cleared the taxiways. But the Taliban are controlling the entrance to the airport.
Yeah.
And so there's no Americans that can get through that gauntlet to get to their flights. And besides, the United States is giving preference to Afghanis and other NATO personnel. For example, they've flown out 2,000 people yesterday, and there were only 325 Americans on the plane.
Yes.
And you look at these planes, and they're full of Afghanis. So clearly the United States has got an agenda here in pulling a disastrous pullout that was ill-conceived. And General Milley's going to own this. This guy is a disaster. He's a woke general. He's, you know, talked about white rage.
There's not going to be any consequences for him, though, do you think? I mean, does anybody ever suffer any consequences in Washington now? Do you really think, are we beyond the point where anybody's going to be held accountable for anything that happened?
No. There'll be no accountability, to be sure, but his reputation will be forever stained, you know, by what's happening. And so will General Austin, who's now Defense Secretary, et cetera. But, you know, the bigger question is, why pull out this disaster? Why leave Afghanistan now? You see, they have been there for 20 years pushing the war on terror when that was basically undone by the military operations 10 years ago. They decided to do the nation-building routine, building up the Afghan army, which was a non-starter from the very beginning. You know, as one person pointed out, for every person on the payroll who's actually there in the military, they're paying 10 people. That's the corruption level within the Afghan military.
Wow.
For every actual soldier on the ground that they're paying 9 additional people who are phantom soldiers, and the money's going into the pocket of the leaders.
Yeah. It's amazing.
So this is a very corrupt
couple of things that you mentioned. You talked about how, you know, Trump had a good plan. Anthony Schaefer talked about that. But why didn't Trump do it? I mean, because he pushed it off into May. Why didn't they just do it last year when they were making the announcements? You know, why say we're going to do it another 6 months? And then again, they didn't do anything at all. And then Biden came in and said, well, it's not going to be in May. It's going to be in September. Why didn't Trump do it earlier, you think?
Well, you know, Trump doesn't know anything about military strategy. He doesn't make good decisions, really. He takes advice from other people. And they kept telling him you couldn't do this for that reason or another. Now, one of the things that he did do, of course, is he had an agreement to have a certain amount out by May 1st, and Biden dumped that agreement or violated that. That sent the Taliban off to say, well, the United States has violated their portion of the agreement. They went to the warlords and said, okay, you know, you got to depend on us now. You're not going to be able to depend on the U.S. agreement.
Yeah.
And so there's purposeful sabotage along this process. Remember, Trump was sabotaged in everything. When he tried to get out of Syria, he was sabotaged by the military, who did nothing but actually put in more troops and control more oil going out of Syria. When he tried to pull out of Afghanistan, they sabotaged that too. Now, nobody knows, at least from my point of view, what went on in the inside conversations that stopped Trump from actually doing something. But, you know, Trump makes decisions that we're going to do something, and then he gets undermined by it. So it happens time and again.
Pompeo even said, you know, he makes these decisions and he says these things publicly, and then we take him aside and we talk to him and tell him how it really is.
Yeah.
Because he didn't say exactly what they said. Let's talk about, when we talk about purposeful things. I mean, you look at the thousands of people that are flying out. I played a report earlier from CBS, and they said, you know, you got all, look at these planes filled with Afghans, and there's no ID at all. We have, these people don't even have nothing, no form of ID. We have absolutely no ID. We have no idea who these people are. Do you think that's part of the plan?
Well, certainly they're using it as an excuse to stuff another 30,000 refugees into the United States. And we have about four U.S. governors from Georgia and Utah and others that are saying, yeah, send them here, send them here. We want to be good players to American people trying to, you know, bootlick their way up the Republican establishment. So it's very, very sad that these states are going to pull in a lot of additional refugees. I mean, we don't have any medical records of them. They don't have any passports. It's just really sad. And we haven't, you know, even these people may be bringing in disease, such as many of the refugees have that came in from Africa.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
We're sick and we brought those people into the United States, but they don't care.
No.
This is a political agenda.
No, as they're trying to shut down anybody flying in. I mean, they're not even going to allow a PCR test if you're going to fly into the United States anymore internationally. You got to have a vaccine. Now, these people, they didn't, you know, they don't have a vaccine. They don't have a PCR test. We don't even know who they are. We don't know who they are politically. What is this going to do to disrupt America? I've seen figures, Joel, as high as 80,000. And as we've seen in the past, when the American government says it's X number of people, it's usually a lot more than that. You even got Macron and people in Europe concerned about the massive immigration of people out of Afghanistan. But you don't hear a peep out of anybody. I haven't heard. Have you heard any, even any Republicans concerned about that?
No, I haven't heard any pushback at all. You know, this is one of the problems with a nation building thing. When you're going to pull out surreptitiously, you have a lot of people who have pledged allegiance to the governments that the United States established there. They've been translators for the military. These people are marked for death.
Yeah.
And I personally don't think the refugees are going to amount to that much coming out of Afghanistan directly. A lot of them may come out of the people who fled Afghanistan into Azerbaijan, into other countries, Turkmenistan. I wouldn't be surprised if the United States started airlifting those people back to the United States.
Yeah.
Because they far outnumber the people that are left in Afghanistan who may or may not be able to get to the airport, just like the Americans. Now, in contrast, you know, the British commandos are running patrols into the city and collecting British people and bringing them to the airport. The U.S. is saying, you know, you're stuck. We can't guarantee your safety. You have to see if you can get to the airport. And they can't get through the gauntlet of the Taliban that surround the airport.
That's right. Yeah.
Now, I'm not exactly sympathetic to 40,000 Americans in Afghanistan. You know, these people, almost all of them, are working for U.S. contractors or NGO organizations doing the nation building, et cetera. And, you know, if anybody has half a conscience, they would say, I'm not taking that contract.
That's right.
Not going into Afghanistan.
That's right.
So I'm not really familiar, I mean, sympathetic for people who bring in their children, you know, and expect now to get out. But it is utterly unconscionable for the United States to leave them there without any support and to not use military forces to go in around them. But as I say, I suspect this was meant to be a disaster. You know, there's a few possibilities, David. Either the globalists decided, well, we're not going to push the American people towards nation building. They know that the gig is up. There's no public support for doing this stuff in the future. So let's poison the waters so that this doesn't happen again. That's one possibility. The other one is that they're poisoning the waters against interfering in another nation because Taiwan is next on the list for falling.
Yes, exactly.
And they don't want Americans to say, oh, let's go in and help Taiwan. They'll say, oh, it's Afghanistan all over again.
Yep.
That could be a very real possibility because that really is a threat coming up very quickly.
And that is something that a lot of people point out. Of course, the Chinese government is running editorials about that, but people said that at the very beginning. They said, well, what does that say about Taiwan? And that's a good point that you just made there, Joel, the fact that if they don't want to get involved in Taiwan, that they're working on public opinion there. When we look at this, and that's the big point that people have made, it's like, how are our allies going to look at this? How are they going to view this? Not just in Taiwan, but elsewhere. But I would say, as you're talking about the abandonment of the people who are contractors for the U.S. government, people who were natives there, Afghans, who worked with the U.S. government, that's going to make anybody have second thoughts about working with the U.S. government if they come into your country or being a contractor for them as well. But besides the sovereign states that are looking at this and kind of saying, well, I don't think they're a reliable ally, they're not a reliable employer either, are they? No honor among thieves.
That's right.
Right?
Well, it's just like, you know, the government has always said we take care of our own, the military.
Mm-hmm.
But I can tell you, they've proven now they don't take care of anybody but their own objectives.
That's
and
right.
The military are going to be sacrificed in this next war. As I pointed out in my World Affairs brief, the U.S. is going to allow a preemptive first strike to fall on U.S. military forces. And so I think, you know, there's some hidden blessing in the fact that the woke military generals are pushing out the good people out of the military because of critical race theory, because of vaccine policies. I think it's a real blessing that good people are bailing out of the military. They won't be there when that first strike falls, when most of them will die. And our own woke military leaders will use the first strike to justify getting us into a global military government after our military has been decapitated. So this is a very, very evil agenda. We're dealing with people who have no conscience, no allegiance except to their own satanic global government concept. And believe me, this is a satanic conspiracy. There's no person evil enough to think up this stuff on their own.
That's right.
They have to be taking orders from a higher power, from the darker side of the universe.
That's right. And just take a look at what was done yesterday in the Biden press conference. He gets up there, and his total focus is the domestic war against Americans, the COVID war. And then when he finishes with that tirade, he just walks off and takes no questions at all. Everybody wanted to ask him about Afghanistan. So let's get to the real issue here. And that is the satanic global war against the American people and against all the people of the world. I mean, this is happening in every country around the world. We were the ones who created the genetic injection to spread it around the rest of the world and funded it. Even AstraZeneca, we bought massive 300 million of those to give them an order. But the others, we gave them big orders. We helped them to develop these things. Give us your take on what you think is up right now as we move into the summer, as they are pushing us towards vaccine mandates and vaccine passports this fall, as they're telling us that we've got this new strain that is now uncontrollable, the new variants. What is your take on all of this?
Well, first of all, I think the testing is still bogus, even though the CDC has said we're abandoning the PCR test in favor of it. Nobody else is doing that. Look,
yeah,
this is a very difficult. Genome sequencing takes a lot of time. You can't have instant tests that do that. They're still using the PCR test. So this was really a PR stunt by the CDC, you know, to gain scientific credibility with the people who knew that the PCR test was bogus in terms of ginning up this thing. But it's still being used. That's what I want to tell people. So you can disregard all of these cases and the fact there is no test for the Delta variant. They simply are taking PCR tests of everybody, and the CDC says a certain percentage of these are 75% Delta variants, and we're supposed to trust the CDC that they're correct. But they're not taking a test for the Delta variant, because you'd have to do a genome sequence
exactly
to be able to determine if it's the Delta variant. But
exactly.
I'll tell you this.
And I've said that before, and that's, I'm glad to hear you say that, Joel, because that is so key. There is no test for the Delta variant. They're just making this up as they did at the very beginning. At the very beginning, they were telling people to do a clinical diagnosis because they don't have the test and they don't work. And they don't have, they're not doing the test on the Delta variant. And we knew this ahead of time because for years when they were pushing the annual flu shot, they would tell the doctors, look, don't send that to us. We don't have the time to test all those things. You just do a clinical diagnosis there. And we heard that last August, the American Hospital Association said, wait a minute, you're not going to pay us our COVID bonus? You told us that you didn't have the test, that they didn't work, and you told us just to do a clinical diagnosis, and now you don't want to pay us unless we've got paperwork for a PCR test? They don't have a test for the Delta variant. That's very important for people to understand.
And the other important thing to realize about this propaganda push is that viruses do not replicate and transmit very effectively during the warm summer months when people are getting a lot of vitamin D3. Vitamin D3 in sunshine makes people relative resistance during the warm summer months. And so this surge that's happening is a surge because of the vaccinated shedding spike proteins and infecting other people.
Yes.
I get emails almost every day from people who have worked in the medical establishment who come down with a bad case of COVID with nothing different in their life except they're being around vaccinated people.
Mm-hmm.
I have a brother who, against my advice, took the vaccine for whatever reason, he and his wife, and they both came down with COVID a week later.
Wow.
A very, very serious case.
Mm. Are they okay now?
Pardon me?
Are they okay now?
Yeah.
Good, good.
What, yeah, they recovered.
Did they take something like ivermectin, or did they recover with the kind of stuff that is prescribed by Fauci?
No. They just recovered by normal, healthy living. They didn't take anything at all.
Good. That's good.
And that's typical of people with COVID. Most people who are normally healthy will recover without ivermectin. It really helps if you do zinc and vitamin C and vitamin D3.
Right.
But ivermectin really knocks it dead, and so does hydroxychloroquine and other things too. So if you get it, you know, early enough. But still, it's very, very important to realize another aspect of this COVID false surge pandemic is that the protocols of the hospital are shoving people into the ICU, whether they need it or not, and they're pushing ventilators upon them because of this financial incentive mm-hmm. they get from the COVID bailout funds to hospitals. But Kate Daly, who's a very popular talk show host around the nation, documented how her husband, who isn't particularly healthy, got pneumonia. He had pneumonia in 2017. He got pneumonia again. They went into the hospital and they immediately said, this is a COVID pneumonia. And it wasn't. They showed him the x-rays that it was the same as the 2017 pneumonia. No difference. They put him in the ICU. They wanted to give him all the protocols and put him on a ventilator. And she had to absolutely say, no way. And I demand that I get ivermectin for my husband. The doctors refused, saying this was not approved. Even though it's an approved drug, has been there for, you know, 30, 40 years.
Yeah.
She finally, because she would not, you know, sign off on what they wanted to do, got one doctor to get the ivermectin. And he said, well, find out what the dosage is. Here's a doctor asking the patient to go find out what the dosage is.
They don't care.
I mean,
they don't want that to happen. This is, and I've said this for the longest time, it's a financially incentivized medical malpractice. If they can identify you, I've got people working EMS sending me information saying, Now when we got somebody in who's obviously having a heart attack, we don't take them in to address that. We take them in and do a COVID test first. Why? Because they get a bonus of 20 to 25% on that, plus a $13,000 right up front from the federal government. And then if you get really sick and they put you on a ventilator, they've hit the big time bonanza there. That's what this is all about. And they don't want people doing cheap and effective stuff. And that's what's really concerning, isn't it, Joel? To see that this is happening in hospitals, that they've just become mercenary, and that they are, you know, conducting malpractice is very concerning. They're now saying that if you don't have the vaccine, there was just a case that they were telling people you're not going to get an organ transplant if you don't have the vaccine. I mean, this is where this is all headed.
That's right. I'm covering that story in Friday's World Affairs Brief too. It's they're holding people hostage for medical care, and personally, I'm. You know, except for people who have genetic defects and other things that they can't help, most people really can live healthy enough and get healthy. And I mean, you got to work hard at it. You can't just eat normal and expect to be healthy in today's world. But you need to prepare to stay out of the medical establishment because they are going to hold you hostage to the vaccine or to multiple COVID tests, which you don't want to take because they're bogus and they will put you in quarantine and label you as a COVID spreader when you're not. Worst of all, you just don't want to take that vaccine. You're going to be a vaccine. You're going to be a spike protein shedder and infect other people. You know, it's unconscionable. The CDC continues to push that the vaccine is safe for pregnant women.
Yes.
After thousands of actual abortions that have had from women who have taken the vaccine when pregnant. And they continue to push the fact that this is safe and effective. It's just a massive propaganda wave. I see it on the television all the time, paid for with state government tax money, safe and effective, safe and effective. And they talk about all these vaccine stories and smiling people taking the injection. And they never talk about any of the deaths, of which now exceed over 12,000 in the VAERS system, as well as the hundreds of thousands of vaccine-damaged people. This is an actual conspiracy against truth a conspiracy against informed consent.
Yes.
There
is no such thing as public health. There's only individual health. And if they're going to deny individual health in the name of some collective good, you're going to deny the individual health and the consent of all the individuals. There is no public health whatsoever. And when you look at this, you're talking about pregnant women. Pregnant women who have been given advice, don't drink alcohol, don't do drugs, don't do all the... But here, take this experimental genetic concoction, because I'm sure that's safe. We know that's safe. They haven't tested any of this stuff. And they're forcing this on kids without parental consent. I've got a video clip of Australia where they did this in a large setting, and they had three kids who passed out. They got video of the kids on the floor, and then they pushed the people away. They put screens around them so they couldn't get video of it. It's just amazing to me what they're doing to pregnant women, to children, but to all of us. So in light of this, Joel, you've talked about relocation, and I think that's a key part of this. There is a difference, at least at the rate at which this is happening. This is global, and it is kind of dependent on what people will put up with in different areas. I don't think, for example, that Greg Abbott is a person who loves informed consent or any of this other stuff. He just pulled things back a little bit because he's going to get a lot more pushback from people at churches. So he didn't go as far as some of the other people did. He's rolling it out maybe a little bit more slowly. But what do you think in terms of, has this changed your prognostication for strategic relocation, this COVID globalist false flag?
Well, it has, and it's an ever-changing target that's always moving. I updated Strategic Relocation, North American Guide to Safe Places in the year 2020, just last year, to basically take in the COVID false pandemic, or at least the exaggerated pandemic and the problems. And now we've morphed into the vaccine mandates, et cetera, and the target's always changing because, unfortunately, all of the Republican governors went along with this COVID nonsense in the beginning. They all drank the Kool-Aid.
That's right.
And so it really undermined any of the so-called safe places being in, you know, Republican or conservative-based states. Even Utah and Idaho, which were the two top-rated states in the book in terms of overall safety, distance from population centers, and other threats, both had mainstream governors that went along with this stuff completely and denied people's fundamental rights and went along with these bogus emergency powers.
Yeah, that's right. Now, when you had the incentivization of this, you know, the state of emergency that Trump did, as Ammon Bundy has pointed out, the governor there in Idaho, Brad Little, got for his own personal discretion, he could give it to whoever he wished. He had an amount that was equivalent to four times what the state budget was, if I recall correctly, what the multiple was. But it was a multiple of the state budget. And even though he's a Republican, even though there's a Republican legislature, he's telling the Republican legislature when they wanted to get together and start to limit some of the stuff, he goes, no, you're not going to get together. And then he crafted some legislation to twist the arms of businesses to do the Fauci rituals and then call them back into session. I mean, like some kind of pre-Revolutionary War governor of the crown. I mean, it's amazing to watch this. And I had so many people say, well, it's only the Democrats. So it's not the Democrats. It's Democrats and Republicans, isn't it?
Well, it tends to be people who are yes men to the establishment. That's what you've got to be careful of.
That's right.
And it's very, very difficult for a real, true constitutional conservative to get elected, even in a conservative state like Utah and Idaho, because the mainstream media is always controlled by establishment people.
That's right.
And they don't like hardcore conservatives, and so they will badmouth them. They won't give them press. They won't give them, you know, they really skew the tables against them. So it's a real problem. Now, I must say that the Utah legislature has really come back against the mainstream governor. They passed legislation taking away the emergency powers of the health officials to do mask and vaccine mandates. They actually took away the power, so the health officials did not have the emergency power to do that. And I'll tell you, the media there in Utah is just complaining to beat the band about how we need masks for these school children, and these poor school districts can't do it now because the legislature has overruled their emergency powers, and parents are crying out for masks, and that's a lie.
That's right.
I mean, we're just subjected to a massive stream of propaganda. In fact, when you go to the school board meeting, it's packed with anti-mask parents saying we do not want our children to be subjected to wearing masks again, and to claim and to give propaganda value to these few parents who want masks, who are, I don't know what planet they live on. It's just a real crime against these things. But going back to strategic relocation, it's made it very, very difficult now to say where safe states are. For example, Florida is a zero-rated state, and that's because of its geography of having millions of people down in this lone peninsula and only two ways out of the whole state. Because of my projection, when there is a World War III, when you're going to have preceded by an EMP strike that's going to take down the grid probably for at least a year, because we don't stockpile any of the transformers in this country that take the 1,000 voltage down to usable voltage, you just can't get it back once those transformers are destroyed by an EMP strike. But the point is, you have mass refugee scenarios in high density population centers like Florida, all trying to get out of this peninsula.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and that's one of the reasons that makes it a zero-rated state, plus the fact that it's a hot weather state, it's humid, lots of insects and other things, and without air conditioning, I'll tell you, you don't want to be living in Florida.
That's right.
Won't be any. But the point is, it's now got the appearance of a very good conservative governor, Governor DeSantis, but I don't trust him ultimately. And I tell people when they say, well, shouldn't we all move to Florida now to be around Governor DeSantis? Well, you got to remember that Florida has a constant influx of people from the Northeast, and eventually it's going to become a blue state because of all of the Northeasterners coming down there and bringing their liberal politics with them. Just like Texas has got a huge influx of Californians leaving, and Idaho's got an influx of Californians, and a lot of them are conservative, but a lot of them are liberals too, and so they're eventually changing the demographics of these countries. But I tell people, you don't make a permanent relocation decision based upon a political leader in a particular state.
That's right.
Now, for example, you've got Governor Kristi Noem of South Dakota, and she's very conservative on many things, but people fail to realize that she actually bought into this pandemic hook, line, and sinker and was going to sign legislation, you know, giving her all the emergency bill powers, et cetera. And then she decided, no, I'd better take the other position. She, you know, changed positions. and came out against locking down, though she is in favor of vaccines and is won't push a mandate, but she's pushing those. But I'll tell you, the establishment media in South Dakota are determined to get her out of office. Mm-hmm. She will not survive this because of the media, I believe, over long term. And as far as Governor Abbott of Texas, you know, I don't trust him either. He's like a chameleon. He'll read the tea leaves of where the conservatives want, and he'll give them part of or half a loaf. But I don't trust him ultimately as a conservative. And Governor Bill Lee of Tennessee, that's a highly rated state in the East, and he has been an extreme disappointment signing in or accepting this concentration camp isolation of COVID people into his law. And the state school board has mandated a lot of bad policy in Tennessee. So it's very, very difficult to predict now where safety is going to be, except with this one remaining criteria. If you go to a state that has an overwhelming majority of conservatives, it's very unlikely that they're going to eventually overturn all of that, even with importation. Mm-hmm. So that's why Utah and Idaho, even though I've downrated them half a star in the book, they're still the most highly rated because they have overwhelming conservative majorities in there. And it's showing up right now. Governor Little is under a lot of pressure. He's probably going to not win a re-election. Ammon Bundy is running against him. Lieutenant Governor McGeechum is running against him. Solid conservatives, there's two or three. What they're trying to do, of course, is they did when they elected Governor Little, they try to flood the number of people running for governor with phony conservatives so that it splits the conservative vote.
That's right.
So that the mainstream can come out on top. This is a very sophisticated political battle we're fighting in these states. And that's why in Utah, the mainstream came in and tried to get and got away with a court decision giving a person alternative from coming through the conservative caucus system. They wanted to allow them to do a petition or a signature petition and get on the ballot bypassing the conservative caucuses. And that's how every one of the mainstream governors have got elected lately, is not going through the caucus where they'd get ousted, but by using the petition drive and getting on the ballots, with a primary, basically holding a primary and getting on through normal processes, which the media, of course, pushes them and promotes them.
Well, let me ask you this, because you're talking about, you know, the futility of these governors and one state after the other, even if we have largely conservative people there. Aren't we at the situation now where we ought to start to adjust? And it's difficult for you. It's difficult for me to identify where conservative enclaves are within a particular state or something. But I've looked at this over the last year. And not only did I lose any hope, and I didn't have any hope for a long time that any help was going to be coming from Washington, but even at the state level, we occasionally have conservative legislatures that will push back, but sometimes they don't. Sometimes they get manhandled by the governor, as happened in Idaho. In Utah, they did push back, as you point out. But isn't it at the point where we need to start to find rural areas where there's a large core of conservatives who will nullify what these people are trying to do at the federal and even at the state level and hang together there? Isn't that perhaps maybe that's what I've been looking at and talking to people about?
That's a good point, Dave. The problem with that has been this. I mean, look at Oregon, for example. Oregon is 90% conservative counties, and the whole state is controlled by the Portland metro area. Look at Washington, 80% conservative counties, and it's all controlled by the Seattle-Tacoma area, which is a Democratic stronghold. California, the same way. You know, there is this movement to try to take Eastern Oregon and Eastern Washington and put it in with Idaho to get a conservative state. But in order to do that, you've got to have the approval of Congress as well as the legislature of the state. The legislatures in Oregon and Washington are vastly Democratic controlled. They're not going to approve it. Congress is controlled by the Democrats. They're not going to approve it. The only way that they would approve a split of a state is like in California, where they make a Northern and Southern California still both controlled by Democratic strongholds in San Francisco and L.A., and then they get two more additional senators.
Yeah.
So that's the only reason the Democrats would go for that. But really, the issue of nullification is a more difficult one. You know, the Constitutional Sheriff Association under Richard Mack has tried to make the point and has trained a lot of sheriffs that you are the ultimate law enforcement official in your county. And you can nullify, you do not have to follow federal law. And that's been a Supreme Court ruling. But time after time, we found when states have sheriffs who are pro-Second Amendment and try to nullify Second Amendment enforcement in their county, they get overruled by the state. And there's a lot of pressure for the county commission to remove that sheriff. And county commissioners are generally a weak lot of people. They're generally people who are not hardcore. They deal with a lot of mundane, you know, zoning issues and other things. And they're not really understanding the overall political threats to the nation and willing to support a sheriff on a Second Amendment basis.
Yeah, they've kind of been put in office. They've kind of been put in office by the people who want to do real estate development. That's what I've noticed, and so that's really kind of their wheel well. You know, they're going to that's what they're going to be focused on is like Constitution. What's that? But when you're in an area, for example, up in New York, you had that guy, several different business owners who had a meeting in a gym. They were not exceeding the allowed number of people. They were not open for business. And yet the police show up and they ran them off. You remember that? He got then attacked by the local public health official, gave him a $15,000 fine. He was on Fox News and he tore it up right in front of the camera. And so they continued to push him on that. But the guy, the way they shut this thing down, which I loved, was the local the guy who collects the money, the assessor or whatever, but it was the guy who had the office where he actually collects the money for fines. And he said, well, I've just given this guy 100 years to pay that off. I mean, if we have a group of people who are active, who understand the Constitution in a given area, there's a lot of different ways that we can shut that down where the rubber meets the road at the local level. Would you agree with that or not?
Well, I would agree with it in principle, David, but not in practice, because frankly, I've been very, very disappointed at the lack of hardcore thinking and resistance of American people when COVID fiasco was put upon us. Yeah. I mean, I saw through it immediately. You saw through it. A lot of people saw it. But the average American person, fully 80% of them have bought it hook, line, and sinker and is still buying it.
That's right.
And that's because despite the proliferation of good news on the alternative media, still I think about 80% of Americans take their primary news from the mainstream media. And so they are really dumbed down. And they send their kids to public schools and they get dumbed down there and they get filled with all of this pro-government, pro-environment, pro-evolution material.
Yep.
And ultimately, too, you know, there is the principle of conscience being denigrated within society over time. You know, when I was growing up in the 50s, you would hear a lot from your parents about conscience and following what's right, what you know is right. You hardly ever hear that anymore. You have students being raised on social media with your electronic devices and going to public schools. And that's why most conservatives lose their children.
That's right. That's right.
Because they don't correct according to conscience. They let them get captured by worldly philosophies and feelings and social interactions in public schools, so they don't want to be homeschooled. I want my friends. And the only safety, ultimately, going back to strategic revocation, is not only getting to a vastly majoritarian conservative area that can control the state legislature, but you've got to stay rural enough to stay away from the COVID police and the mass police and all of that. They don't bother with the rural areas. They only deal with the cities. Now, most people's jobs are in the cities, but I'm going to tell you that, like many emails that I'm getting, almost everyone in the healthcare community is having to leave their job now or take the vaccine because of these mandates that are going. Even big corporations are requiring the vaccine now. Airlines are requiring the mask, and it's been extended another 4 months, which is just ridiculous. I will not fly the airlines with this mask requirement. It's just demeaning the stewardesses are just.
I think they're
feminazis.
They're gradually rolling this thing out so that we won't be able to have any kind of travel. I mean, you know, first he starts with you're not going to fly into the U.S. unless you have a vaccine. It doesn't matter if you got a negative PCR test, even. And now they're talking about doing that domestically, putting people who are unvaccinated on a no-fly list. This is a former Obama official writing op-ed pieces on the on NATO's The Atlantic and so forth. But they're going to do that. They're just waiting to gradually get that out there. And I wouldn't be surprised if they were to try to stop interstate travel that is non-air. I mean, this is they're just gradually rolling this out as people get accustomed to it. But it goes back to what you started with when you're talking about the evil and what is going on with Afghanistan and other places. This truly is a spiritual war. When people say that this is a cultural war, they're not even aiming at the right target. And so that is ultimately the issue. I mean, our ultimate salvation, even in this secular world, is not about trying to find some place out in the woods. It is really about our relationship with Christ. And so that is really what is the core that is rotten in our country, whether it's our, you know, the kids or the next generation. That's what has to be addressed. And so I think, you know, we can just try to buy ourselves some time, and we can try to create some communities, try to, you know, create a community of Christians that are going to focus around that to start to create those enclaves, because that's really what I'm trusting in all this. I'm trusting in Christ, even if this does not, we're all going to die from something one way or the other. So that's where my ultimate trust is. But even in my temporary situation, I put myself in that. And I think that's really where we need to be ultimately focused. That's really our ultimate strategic relocation, isn't it?
Well, in principle, yes, but in practice, we've got a very weak Christian community.
Yeah.
Our churches have been invaded with the doctrine of salvation by grace alone. You have to do nothing. Christ does it all. I mean, conscience rules against that. Conscience is fully, and conscience has two voices, really, that are capable of speaking to you. There's the voice of the Lord that's trying to prompt you to do what's right, to eat properly, to discipline your children, to do the right thing in business and things. And then you have the voice of Satan camped on the other shoulder saying, oh, it's okay, you know, you're too tired to do that. Don't worry about it now. Put it off. People need to get in touch. You see, we've been taught in Christianity that only the soft version of Christ. He's all unconditionally loving. He accepts you whatever you are. And that's a real problem because, you see, that gets people to be satisfied in their slovenly attitudes. So where the real voice of Christ coming to your is always getting you to improve and to do better and to lose weight and to exercise and to get healthy so that you're not subject to these vaccines. And Christians, almost more than any other people, have turned soft. They're overweight. They don't exercise. They are too reliant on the grace of God to save them rather than listening to the specific voice of the Savior prompting them to do what's right in their daily life.
Yeah, now, you know, I think when we look at it, we always see that Satan mixes the truth in with a lie. And so, you know, you can look at this and say, well, you know, the Bible teaches salvation by grace alone through faith alone, but a faith that is saving is not alone. You're going to have, it's going to be accompanied by works. That's the part that there is a separation from. And we see that also in the eschatology. You know, some people, depending on their eschatology, they might look at the situation and say, well, this is good. If things are melting down rapidly, they're melting down globally, that means that I'm going to get helicoptered out and I don't have to die. And so they actually kind of want to go along with all of this, whereas our attitude ought to be the attitude that even if we knew the world was going to end tomorrow, we'd plant a tree today. We need to be in this fight, and anything that takes you out of this fight is a misunderstanding, I think, of what we're called to do. We're not going to save ourselves, but we need to do everything, and we need to act as if we are working to save ourselves and save our families. We have lost that in our culture because of lies that have been mixed in with the truth. I think the way Doug Wilson puts it, he says the atheists have got an eschatology and the Muslims have got an eschatology, and in their eschatology, they win now. We got an eschatology where we lose. So that kind of gives us a whole idea of how we're being pacified in all this. And I think there's a lie if that's your attitude that you're looking at, that you're just going to sit back and do nothing.
Well, the problem, you know, of works in Christian doctrine is a problem in the sense that we all agree that Paul talks against mechanical works that guarantee salvation. You can't do 30 Hail Marys and get your salvation, instead by external works. But there are the spiritual works that the Spirit requires, and that's what conscience is all about. When he prompts you to get up on time and do it, you're responsible for rejecting the prompting of God if you refuse to do it.
Yeah,
that's right. When he prompts you to prepare, when he prompts you to lose weight, when he prompts you, you see, you're responsible for those personal works that he requires of the Spirit. They're not mechanical works because they're individualized.
Yeah.
And that's what conscience is all about. The real test of life is not in the commandments per se, but in the still small voice of conscience that's constantly tutoring you on what you should be doing. And if you never violate the prompting of conscience, you'll never get even close to violating one of the commandments.
Yeah.
But you can be living the commandments and violating hundreds and hundreds of promptings per day and be in violation of the spiritual works required of the Lord that you perform based upon the still small voice of the Spirit. That's where we're failing as Americans. That's where we're failing in conscience. Nobody becomes a criminal without becoming chronically bad at violating conscience. Nobody has problems with your family and conduct of children and drug and alcohol abuse without violating hundreds of little tiny promptings that lead to a degradation of your receptivity to conscience, that lead to sealing it off, to lead to callousing it over so that you no longer hear the voice of the Lord. Now that's my big spiritual message to people, is listen to the voice of conscience and beware that Satan is always in there too, trying to rationalize and downplay the promptings so that you don't listen. And remember, you know, a lot of people in revolutionary theory talk about it only took 3% of the communists in Russia to gain the country. So why can't we as 3% of conservatives take over the country? Well, it's very simple. The communists were working in the direction of people's weaknesses, appealing to them with socialism and free benefits and this and that, and not being judged by other people.
That's right.
To take people back uphill, to take people back uphill against their natural weaknesses and tendencies requires more than 3%.
That's right.
You've got to have a real strong majority of people who listen to conscience, who listen to the Spirit of the Lord, and you have to have leaders that listen to the Spirit and lead accordingly. And we have a dearth, David, of leadership in this country.
That's right.
Now, we have people on this planet just as good as the Founding Fathers who understand the principles of liberty, but they're not allowed to lead because the mainstream media keeps them from ever winning elections almost without exception.
And a big part of what the mainstream media does, and this is another part of taking the easy path out, and that is to shame and to shun out of society anybody that takes an opinion that is contrary to them. And that especially is true of religious beliefs. And so that's what we're seeing throughout the churches everywhere, that everybody is being pushed and pressured into bowing the knee to LGBT or whatever the current point of attack is. They're afraid to speak out in opposition of it, even to speak out, let alone to live their life. But they're afraid to even speak out about that because of the ostracism that they know that they're going to face. And that's the key thing. People have got to develop a backbone to push back against this stuff, not to be intimidated, not to be shamed of what they are, what they believe. And if they don't do that, I don't think they're going to do anything other than that. You know, if they can't even get past that point, and it is a massive the mass of people coming after people to shame them and to push them in a different direction. And this has been going on a long time. It's been a long, long drifting process. This didn't happen overnight. It began, I believe, with the schools where they started pushing God out of the schools and every way possible to shame people about that. And now we've gotten to the point where it is now touching on every aspect of our life. I believe that really is the central thing that we've got to address, and that is you know, our ability to be able to not be ashamed of Christ, you know. And if people are going to be ashamed of Christ, that's it. It's over with. They're not going to do anything at that point. But I think the key thing is we're going to have to start building our society from ourselves out, don't you think?
Well, that's right. And that's why I've written that special piece on my website, worldaffairsbrief.com, called The Still Small Voice of Conscience. Because I tell you, conscience trains you early on in life to fight for principle. If you give in to every temptation of Satan you make a habit pattern of tossing aside the promptings, the pushing feelings of the Lord to get better and to be stronger and to work harder. You develop a non-fighting spirit from your youth, and that holds over into adulthood.
That's right.
Fighters in adulthood have been tutored through listening to conscience to be fighters of principle for their own weaknesses, against them, their own selves, almost without exception. There's a consistency there of learning, and that's what people don't realize, that most of the promptings from conscience are about temporal affairs. But if you disregard the temporal affairs about your reading habits, your television habits, your the junk food you buy at the store, if you disregard those, then you are becoming, you actually get penalized in terms of the higher level spiritual promptings that eventually lead to a higher enlightenment. That's the schoolmaster effect of the Lord, is that he uses the body and the temporal weaknesses and prompts us to overcome those so that we become more susceptible to the light and higher things of law, government, and spirituality, and child discipline and other things that are more difficult to, you know, write down.
That's right.
In Scripture, for example.
It's a gradual process. It's a gradual process of drifting away, and that's what we all need to be careful about. And we've seen how that's happened with the culture. We have to focus on how that looks in our own individual lives. Thank you for joining us. Great talking to you, Joel. WorldAffairsBrief.com, and they can get a free sample of that if they go to the site. Is that correct?
That's right. It just as a link on the left says request a sample. Press
okay.
on that and you'll get it in your email.
Good. Thank you so much for joining us. WorldAffairsBrief.com, Joel Skousen. Thank you, Joel. Before we leave and before we close the program, we're getting pretty close to this, I want to just play for you an example of somebody standing up. And a parent, and we've seen a lot of examples of this, and I could play many of these, and we need to have many, many more. When I look at what happened in Australia, that one guy, Martin, as he's walking around with his friend, if the street was filled with people instead of people in uniform, they would have their freedom back. But people are afraid to go out and to confront evil. But this is what it looks like at a school board meeting.
Rooted Wings on Instagram. Nathan Fletcher, I tagged the heck out of you, so I'm sure that you are very familiar with me. Jim Desmond, thank you for your work. Wilma Wooten, this is also directed at you along with Nathan Fletcher. America is not a hospital. California is not a hospital. San Diego, it's not a hospital. This is a constitutional republic that guarantees protection of individual freedom and liberty and due process. This applies to our individual pursuits of medical interventions and health practices. San Diego is not a hospital floor that we collectively have checked into that subjects all patients to equitably prescribed medical care with no due process. Our Constitution does not secure for government power to impose forced equity in medical mandates and interventions or the power to punish carte blanche. There are 3.338 million people in San Diego County, 3,811 people who have died with COVID. Of those, 96%, 3,652 had comorbidities with hypertension, diabetes, cardiac disease, accounting for the top three. Median.
Okay, and we're getting close on time here. You get the idea, right? She's reading them the facts now. But the bottom line is we have to understand that we're not going to live in an insane asylum. This is one flew over the cuckoo's nest time. Now, the opposite of this, when you don't stand up to government, this is what it looks like. In Australia, they have mass vaccination of kids without their parental consent or knowledge.
Why not?
And they had at least three of them pass out as this person is trying to take a picture of it. They covered up. You're not allowed to take a picture. Nope, we're not going to let you do this. These kids are passed out on the floor with an immediate reaction being done by the school without the knowledge or the consent of the parents. So which is it we're going to have? You know, it makes me so sad to see what has happened in Australia, but that is the plan everywhere. It just happened there more quickly. For whatever reason, I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that they'd confiscated guns. But it happened there more quickly than any other place. But that is the plan of what they want to do globally. We have to resist this. We have to resist it individually. We have to stand collectively for individual rights. We have to reclaim our foundation of what we understand. But the key issue is we have to understand that our weapons are mighty. We have God, we have the Holy Spirit, we have prayer. And if there's going to be reformation, it's going to be with us one at a time. That's the way that God works. And so you want to work with that to make that happen. And understand that without that kind of reformation, we don't have a chance. And so it isn't something that God is going to do all at once to everybody in the country. When we had the Great Awakening in America prior to the American Revolution, it was widespread, but it wasn't every single person. So you just make sure that it's you. That's it for today's broadcast. Thank you for listening.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. thedavidknightshow.com.